You want to do summarizing all the public comments made at the hearings. With me are, my name is John Weingart, I'm the chair of the Highlands Council, and with me are two other members of the council, Mimi Letts and Tracy Carluccio. They're members of the Highlands Council staff here, and maybe other council members joining us as we go along. If you want to speak here and didn't already fill out a form when you came in, please do so. I have a large number of people who want to speak now. I'm going to call on people to speak who have not previously spoken at any of our public hearings. There are a number of people who have spoken. I'll call on people who haven't spoken first, and then call on people who have spoken previously and want to speak again. I'll give a couple of names at a time so you know if you're sort of on deck to speak. If you do speak, please come up to this microphone here and give your name and where you were from, and we'll proceed from there. Are there any questions about the ground rules here? Okay. Welcome and thank you all for coming. First speaker is Richard Neuenhaus. And our second speaker will be Michael Pizarro.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm Richard Neuenhaus. I'm the president of the New Jersey Farm Bureau, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak here, especially being first. That's great. Thank you. I have about 5 pages here of testimony. I got highlighted what I'm going to say because I really want to keep it down to the cheap. There's plenty more, but there are some important issues that I'd like to bring up to you, and we'll also make available on through email and also a printed copy to the rest of the council members. The New Jersey Farm Bureau comes to this public hearing today having spent the last 2.5 years working with the Highlands Council and its staff to ensure that the Regional Master Plan protects agricultural businesses, landowners' equity in the Highlands. It is unfortunate that I stand here in front of you today and say that we are very disappointed in the results of this effort. Let me begin with a couple of concerns that we have. The Regional Master Plan is not a land use plan that balances protection of the environment with the economic opportunities. Rather, it is an environmental regulatory strategy that goes beyond the intent of the legislation, in some cases completely ignores the legislation. The Council has spent almost no time in public forum discussing the smart growth and economic elements. Some of the mandates are completely ignored. Just one example of this is a failure of the Regional Master Plan to recommend receiving zones for the transfer development's rights program. We feel that the regional master plan is not based on the best science out there as being proclaimed in the press. We are concerned that the draft regional master plan was released before all documentation was completed. For instance, the draft plan fails to demonstrate the total effect of the land use capabilities map. It is important to see what the region looks like when all the GSI layers are laid on top of each other. In fact, one of the most important reports was not made available until this week. The council has also not released various reports put forth by the consultants which relate to such elements as TDR and build-out. Public scrutiny will be flawed until this information is available for all to review. New Jersey Farm Bureau is very concerned that the Highlands draft, that the Highlands Regional Master Plan draft was released without a policy of equity. At the same time, the plan looks at almost double the amount of land that will have little or no use. Written characterization of the Highlands in the Regional Master Plan sounds more like a wilderness area than a place where 800,000 people live, work, farm, and have good thriving businesses. DP rules and the implementation of the draft regional master plan put over time have a very devastating effect on the economic growth in the area and become very much like the Adirondack region in New York State. We also have many concerns with the agriculture and forestry elements of the RMP. The agricultural resource protection and sustainability element of the regional master plan has many flaws. For one, it does not recognize that agriculture is a business that can only thrive in a healthy business climate. This element fails to lay out the policies for those farms that are in the protection zone and on the land use capability map. Having no such policies for farmers in these areas to follow leaves excessive discretion to the council and Highland staff that may adversely impact the farm businesses. Agricultural sustainability is supposedly a goal, but the provisions of the regional master plan show little knowledge about what's really necessary for the agricultural industry. It is disturbing to see that the regional master plan suggests that over time, the major policies that have been fundamental to the survival of New Jersey agriculture, as in farmland assessment, farmland preservation, USDA farm bill, conservation programs, may be amended to conform to the council's concept of how to manage agriculture. Let me remind you that the Highlands Council does not have anyone with expertise in agriculture available to them. It is unfortunate that these agencies with the most knowledge about agriculture programs have not been sufficiently included in the drafting of the regional master plan. Forestry practices in accordance with the Forestry Management Plan under the auspices of Farmland Assessment Act have been exempt according to Section 30A7 of the Highlands Act. However, according to the regional master plan, the Ecosystems Management Technical Report, forestry will be burdened with a levy of special requirements and duplications. Because of regional master plan policies and the DEP regulations, farm operations in the Highlands will not be able to compete on an even playing level playing field with the rest of the state and the region of the Highlands. Many of the non-agricultural policies concern us also. Many policies in the regional master plan apply a prohibition of agricultural uses, changing in agricultural uses, and or increased municipal regulation of land uses in critical resource areas. The result of adopting such policies will be crippling to agricultural industry in the Highlands. Most important issue for our members is the lack of funding. In recent months, the Highlands Council answer to calls for compensation have been the Highlands TDR program. However, because the Highlands Act does not allow for the Highlands Council to mandate new growth, The Highlands TDR programming is greatly hindered. Furthermore, there is no sign of any dedicated ongoing funding source for a regional Highlands TDR bank. Much has been said about the funding of landowner compensation in the Highlands for the funding in the proposed second round of the Garden State Preservation Trust. We feel that this is only a viable option for GSPT2 if that amount is greatly, greatly increased. GSPT is funded by all residents in New Jersey, and therefore it should benefit all residents and communities in New Jersey. We cannot take away the funding for the Farmland Preservation and Green Acres program from the rest of the state to meet our moral obligations in the Highlands. New Jersey Farm Bureau is pleased to see that the Regional Master Plan addresses some of the issues relating to the need of funding to compensate Highlands landowners. We support the Council in the expansion of the dual appraisal method using January 104 as a benchmark well beyond the deadline set forth in the Highlands Act. But this is not enough. And in closing, I just would like to say that the most glaring problem with the draft Regional Master Plan is that it was adopted without any dedicated source of funding for the landowner compensation. Throughout the public hearing process, you have heard from both supporters and opponents of the Highlands Regional Master Plan that there is a need for this dedicated funding source. Almost every one of the supporters have said that this is important, and some even that without it, the larger effort is going to fail. Although you may not be able to enact laws that would put this in place, you, the Highland Council members, do have the power to do something about this. We are calling on you this morning to put some pressure, much needed pressure, on the legislature. Do not adopt the final Regional Master Plan until the legislature has acted and on its promise made 2.5 years ago to pass laws allowing the Highlands water users to pay a tax for the preservation of land in the Highlands. This will give you time to finish your incomplete plan, provide the public with all the information pertaining to the Regional Master Plan so that we can fully scrutinize it and provide you with valuable input. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Our next speaker is Michael Pizarro, and following him is Karen Meinerhorst.
Michael Pizarro. I represent the New Jersey Environmental Lobby, a state group that has dedicated itself to improving New Jersey's environment for many decades. I'm going to be very brief. We are continuing to review the voluminous documents and will be supplying a series of written comments in the very near future. I want to thank the Council for their hard work for moving forward with what was necessary but sometimes controversial protection plan. Certainly. The Highlands Act and its plan is a manifestation of the state's duty to protect the state's natural resources for everyone, not only people who are here right now, but for future generations. Our natural resources are under serious and threatened attacks. Our water supply is being threatened by 2030, within my lifetime, my children's lifetime, we are going to need more water than we have. That is shocking and requires that we act now. We're having threats to our water quality. If I remember correctly, 91% of the waters in the Highlands area do not support recreational use, and 65% do not support aquatic life. That again is shocking, that we are relying on something that needs a lot of help. We're also being threatened by open space loss. You've heard a lot about property values, and that is necessary, but part of what property values are is the surrounding area. As we continue to develop, overdevelop, property values are going to go down, because what made the Highlands so wonderful, so beautiful, what people wanted to come and live with will be gone. And we also need to protect the area for wildlife. As the island continues to get developed, and it's probably one of the areas that is experiencing one of the most great pressures for development, you're going to have even less water supply. The water supply is going to even be less usable because you're taking more out, you're putting in more impervious cover, which is decreasing the recharge rate, and introducing even more pollutants into what is going into the ground. So I again commend the council for its plan. As I said, the Highlands is developing, the rest of the state is developing. And half of the state, as the plan knows, gets its water from the Highlands. And we've known the Highlands is where we needed to get our water for over 100 years. So it's about time that we did something about protecting this natural resource. As I noted, water supply is paramount. Wildlife and open space, places where we can go, recreate, observe wildlife is just as important. As I said, the master plan noted, 65% of the open waters don't support wildlife, 91% do not support recreational. I kayak, my kids swim, my kids like to fish. Where can they go? Not in New Jersey. And as we continue to develop, if we don't preserve, it's just going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
Thanks for your comments.
Certainly. I just have two more comments. Our wildlife is important. 60% of the Highlands supports critical habitat for threatened and endangered species. 72 species of threatened and endangered or rare species exist there. This is a holistic plan to protect not only our needs for water supply, but wildlife and open space. As I said before, we'll be submitting more detailed comments, but I wanted to come here, voice the New Jersey Environmental Lobby support for the plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen Leiter, question after that, Ron Shea. Let me just ask and repeat. The purpose of this hearing is for comments on the draft regional master plan. So as much as you can have your comments focused on that document, we appreciate it.
Good morning. Thank you. The Coalition for Affordable Housing and the Environment is comprised of environmental planning and housing organizations that believe their goals can and must be achieved by working to promote them simultaneously. The Coalition has appeared before the Highlands Council on numerous occasions and appreciates the opportunities for input that the Council has provided thus far. In those appearances, the Coalition repeatedly urged that the Council take steps to make builders remedy litigation in the Highlands non-existent, because such litigation is the mechanism of last resort to implement the Mount Laurel Doctrine. The Regional Master Plan must ensure that the process of providing affordable housing opportunities never reaches this last resort. Requiring a petition for substantive certification as a prerequisite for conformance with the plan is an excellent first step. Obtaining sub-cert from the Council on Affordable Housing is near ironclad protection against builders remedy litigation, and is critical to ensuring that such litigation is a thing of the past in the Highlands. The process for obtaining substantive certification also allows the opportunity to review sites identified for affordable housing for their environmental sensitivity. At the same time, however, addressing the obligation to provide affordable housing opportunities does not yet permeate the plan. For example, the plan calls for coordination with the Council on Affordable Housing and the Office of Smart Growth to ensure that development and redevelopment activities consider local and regional affordable housing needs. Given that development and redevelopment activities create affordable housing obligations, planning for those activities must not only consider the need, but they must also address this obligation. As the Coalition further analyzes the plan, it's likely that we'll have additional substantive comments. However, promoting environmentally appropriate affordable housing is a core portion of our mission, and we wanted to take this opportunity to commend the Council for the steps it has taken so far in that direction and urge you to fully incorporate that goal into the plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Ronald Shea, and then Richard Dizzo.
Good morning. Members of the Highlands Council, I thank you for the good work you are doing and allowing and for allowing me the opportunity to comment. My name is Ronald Shea. I'm a retired forester with the New Jersey Forest Service, having spent 30 years up in private landowners, manager of woodlands. I am pleased that over half of the Highlands region is forested, and so much attention is being focused on these 464,000 acres in 2007 on the 100th anniversary of the appointment of New Jersey's first state forester. I have attended a number of council meetings and am gratified at the seriousness the council has shown in fulfilling their responsibilities in developing the regional master plan and also seriously listening to public comments. The mandates of the legislation for the state forest in 1907 was forest fire suppression, administration of state forests and parks, operation of the state forest nursery, assistance to private landowners, and information and education, all of which are still being done today. Also, 48 accredited universities and colleges are now granting degrees in forestry. With decades of research and field trials accomplished by these universities and the New Jersey Forest Service, we have a greater understanding how forests form and thrive based on that scientific research and knowledge. The Regional Master Plan has a number of excellent policy statements, goals, and ideas for the future. A few examples are properly managed woodland providing an opportunity to import sustainable and renewable source of wood products. Deer overabundance is a problem. Invasive species control is needed. Recommend keeping the forest healthy. Forests provide watershed protection for water quality and quantity, to mention a few. The forestry community can help to reach these goals and help solve these problems. The report of the Sustainable Forestry Technical Advisory Committee of the Highlands Council addresses many of these forestry issues and policies, and I highly recommend the Council to use the information in that report. There is an exemption for woodland owners under the Farmland Assessment Act of 1964 and the Woodland Amendment of 1986 for forest management activities conducted in accordance with a woodland management plan approved and inspected by the State Forester. This process is a third-party certification review of forestry activities. According to the Farmland Assessment Act for 2004 report published by the Division of Taxation, 100,000 acres of woodlands in the Highland region are enrolled in the Farmland Assessment Program, and more than 75% of these woodlands have a woodland management plan approved by the state foresters. It would be nice to see both public and private owned woodlands have approved forest management plan if they're going to do some forestry activities. Finally, I ask that you use the information of the Sustainable Technical Forestry Advisory Committee report and the best management practices published by the New Jersey Forest Service. The Highlands Council and the forestry community, by working together, can make the forests of the Highlands healthy, vigorous, and sustainable in providing water quality and quantity, biodiversity, forest products, and services. Once again, I thank you for your diligence. I have seen and accomplishing your mission and appreciate the time for listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Richard Bishop, and then after that, Diane Constantine.
Good morning. Again, my name is Richard Bishop, that's B-I-Z-U-B, and I'm with the Pine Lands Preservation Alliance. And it may seem odd why I'm standing up here today talking about the Pine Lands and the Highlands, but there are some similarities that I would like to touch upon. First, I'm not new to the Highlands. I grew up in the Highlands. I grew up in West Milford. My family has lived in that area for 63 years. And I have many fond memories of going out on the lake and doing things with Lake Wayweyon and so on. And I also remember the droughts very well. The Pine Lands plan really has withstood the test of time. You know, it's been around, the Pine Lands Comprehensive Management Plan has been around 25 years, and that came about through the National Parks and Recreation Act of 1978. And we all remember that one because that essentially put the end to the Cox Island Dam project. At the local level, the Pine Lands Protection Act really initiated what we have today in the way of boundaries and the Comprehensive Management Plan. And like you're sitting up there today, there was a first commission What that commission did was something very special. They knew that their efforts were going to be constantly challenged. And with that in mind, they started from a point of strength. They instituted a very strong plan. But what they also did, they recognized when you take something of this magnitude on, that there's always going to be things that just aren't going to fit. So they had a waiver process. So they had a strong plan and a waiver process. And today, if you look at the Pinellas boundaries, after 25 years, actually almost 30 years, it has changed very little. The Pinellas plan and the Pinellas really is not about condemnation. It's about zoning. And today, if you look at the long-term economic study that the Pinellas Commission, science staff, and the statisticians have worked on, you'll see that land values are comparable with areas outside of Pinellas and contiguous. All the economic indicators are basically the same, income and so on. And I'm not a statistician or an economist, so I'm not going to go into that. But I encourage you, and as part of our written testimony, we will submit that plan for you to look at and compare the economics to what constantly comes up here. Again, as a long-term resident of the Highlands, you know, when I would drive through Clinton Reservoir or Canister Reservoir or Charlottesburg during periods of drought, it's almost as if those settlements come back to life. As the water goes down, you see roads, you see homes, you see footings, and you can almost fill in the blanks as far as what was going on 100 years ago. And I would think and say to myself, you know, these people really got a bum deal because their property was taken away from them. And that's not the case in the Highlands or the Pinellas. And yes, there may be some difficult decisions, there's no question about it. But in retrospect, looking at all the people that benefit from those reservoirs and that reservoir system, it was the right decision. And when I looked at the Manasquan Reservoir and saw that being built 20 years ago, I said to myself, that was the right decision. And the Pinellas was the right decision. And a strong plan for the Highlands will also be the right decision. Again, I still spend a lot of time up in the West Milford, Jefferson area. And if you get on a boat or a canoe to the other side, southern side of Lake Wayweyanna, you'll see a stark reminder of what could have happened during the drought. As you approach the end of the lake, you see these pipes, these stand pipes sticking out of the water. And that was from the time when the water was going to be shifted from that part way beyond the lake to other parts that needed water to get it to the people. You know, John Fee, in his book, The Pine Barrens, in 1967, when this came out, you know, it was a great reference. I mean, people, before this book came out, if you had said Pine Barrens, nobody would have known where it was. But when this book came out, if you were in California, Idaho, anyplace else, at least you knew it was someplace in New Jersey. But John McPhee could have written about the Highlands.
So could you try to keep your comments on our draft plan?
Yes, I'm going
to
wrap up in a few seconds. He could have written about the Highlands, Long Pond Ironworks, the Ramco Mountain people, and so on. It's really a clump. It's the same. And the Jetport controversy. And in summary, you know, I'd just like to leave you with one image or a thought. A few years ago, National Geographic magazine took satellite imagery of all the whole United States, and they enhanced it where there was a lot of light and a lot of growth. And you look along the eastern seaboard, it was ablaze in bright colors. And you look along the California coast, bright colors. And if you looked at Montana and Idaho, it was black. When you focused in on New Jersey, you saw two black spots, the Pinellas and the Highlands. And what that tells me, in retrospect, is that the Pinellas plan, after 30 years, is working. It has preserved that area, kept growth where it's supposed to go, and kept the core area the core area. And it also tells me that the black spot for the northern part of the Highlands is not too late, as many critics say. It is not too late if you pass a strong plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me introduce and welcome Eric Peterson, a fourth member of council who's joined the Tracy Carter GM and myself. Our next speaker is Diane Constantine, followed by Emerson Tyson.
Diane Constantine, I'm from the law offices of Allen Zubla, and I'm here this morning on behalf of Sprint Spectrum and Nextel of New York. You may ask, why is a wireless carrier putting themselves in front of the Highlands Council? And the real reason is that there is no provision in the Highlands regulations or in the master plan regarding cell towers or antennas. The municipalities all throughout the United States, and particularly here in New Jersey, are increasingly recognizing the fact that wireless service is very important, and the towns are taking a lot of time in putting ordinances together as to where they'd like to see these types of installations sited and where they don't want to see them sited. And a lot of the redevelopment plans, when they're making redevelopment zones, are also incorporating in specific sites where they would like to see wireless. Excuse me. The Highlands regulations basically ignore telecommunications with the exception of one exemption, which allows carriers to site on utility towers as long as you stay within the footprint of the utility tower. There is such a document called the cell tower addendum that is not codified by the regulations. It's not referred to in the master plan. In fact, your proposed master plan doesn't even refer to public utilities, but for one quick sentence saying that you're willing to work with the public utilities so that they can continue to provide service. In a time where a majority of the people are relying on their cell phones for businesses, home use, safety, the ability to keep in contact with their children, and for 911 services pursuant to the Wireless Public Safety Act of 1999, the placement of wireless facilities should be considered in the master plan. As currently written, wireless carriers cannot place their wireless facilities within the preservation area. The council is basically prohibiting the siting of that unless we go through an onerous waiver process that is taking an extremely long amount of time. And as of now, I don't even know if there's been a waiver that has been approved. So really, you need to carve out an exemption, or as the gentleman before, which was quite ironic that he went before I did because I had no idea who he was, the Pinelands, if you look at their plan, they sat down with the wireless carriers and crafted a comprehensive management plan. And each of the carriers told that council where they needed to site their different locations. And what exists today is actually a plan of where the carriers can go. And it really has been helpful. I'm not going to say it was painless, but it was helpful in that they could site in these preservation areas. They could cite these areas of resources that and natural beauty that you're trying to, everybody's trying to protect, and an agreement was struck basically between all of the parties. So I would urge the council that if you're not going to provide an exemption for wireless carriers or a method for us to cite in the preservation areas, that you consider sitting with the carriers and drafting a comprehensive management plan. That way, both sides will know where they're allowed to go, and they'll still be able to provide service under the Telecommunications Act of 1996. And I thank you for your time, and we will be presenting written comments. Thank you.
Emerson Eisel, followed by David Piper.
Emerson Isley, I'm from the southern part of the state. You probably wondered why I come all the way up here from the south. I'm a farmer down there. I'm a tree farmer. I understand what the forest does, how it protects our waters, it filters the waters as it goes through the different types of soils we have. We produce oxygen from the trees. And if land has a habitat, forestry, anything that pertains to natural resources, I think it's worthwhile protecting. And I'm glad to see people like you making an effort to do this. Whether it's from overdevelopment or livestock from agricultural having access to our streams, polluting that. But I think we're on the right track, and I'd like to see a lowland council in the southern part of the state like it is in the north. I think some of the things that you have to address in your plan is to hold people accountable for what they're doing. The voluntary practices do not work. And I think that just about clears up why I'm here. I think we should have buffers, proper buffers to protect our streams. And I have a motto that I say to everyone, let's keep New Jersey green, but not our waters. Thank you.
I'm sorry to ask that I've heard this question, but I call on people to speak first who have not yet spoken at any of our previous public hearings, and so if I call on you inadvertently, you have spoken, please wait, and then after we get through those people, we'll hear from everyone who has spoken previously.
I have spoken.
That's what I thought. That's how you wait. Sorry. Okay. James Warren, and then Terry Mahmood. James Warren?
Good morning. James Warren. I'm at 102 Petersburg Road in Hackettstown. And I am farmland assessed, woodland management program for quite a number of years now that I actually follow. This document that I'm here to comment on today should not be approved as a plan, because it is not a plan. It should not be approved because it is incomplete. It should not be approved because the costs are unknown. It should not be approved because it does not comply with the law. It should not be approved because the public comment that I am giving here at this time is based on incomplete information. It should not be approved because everyone that has commented on this plan to this time has incomplete information and cannot therefore possibly know what they may be either criticizing or supporting. It should not be approved because key background information has been knowingly withheld from the public, possibly compromising the accuracy of the document and definitely compromising our ability to offer carefully considered comments. The lack of completeness in this plan is clearly evident to anyone who is bothered to read it and observed the word developed used 165 times, determined used 58 times, inventory used 70 times, evaluated used 35 times, ongoing used 6 times. Yes, there are some uses of these words that refer to things that have been done, but that is the exception in the document. Most of the instances imply future actions with no clear indication of when they will be completed in most cases. In fact, it is difficult in many cases to even know when they will be started. How can we comment on this lack of, with this lack of information? And there are other words that indicate future activities that I've not bothered to list at this time. Clearly, we cannot know what to say, as so much is my field of technology, we refer to it as vaporware, and I think that's what this plan is. I am not sure what you call this other than bureaucracy in action. I can cite some specific instances. I'm not going to read those. They're in my comments. You may read them. But there is more, and that is extremely egregious, that I must bring to your attention. Primarily, the issue is money, taxes in particular. By my count, you have used the word require 131 times. Usually, you are requiring towns and counties to do something. So in case you haven't noticed, this state is in financial trouble, and the electorate isn't particularly happy with having the distinction of being the most heavily taxed in the nation. The legislature and the governor have been giving this issue a lot of time, supposedly with the idea of finding ways to reduce our tax burden. The Highlands Council is going in the opposite direction by requiring changes to master plans, changes to zoning, changes to transportation, changes to density, and technical studies. Frequently, requested information seems to be clearly duplicative with work reported to have been done either by the Highlands Council or the DEP. So not only are the towns and counties asked to pay for all of this additional work, it means that you are asking us, the taxpayers, to pay higher taxes to provide water for roughly 4.5 million people who don't live here. You are directly and unfairly taxing us and should not be allowed to burden us in this manner, which clearly discriminates against us by virtue of where we live. Finally, the fact that you have totally ignored paragraph 2, section 11, of the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act by failing to provide anything substantive with regard to the financial component means that you have not fulfilled your obligation under the Act and therefore not developed a plan as called for. Again, it is impossible to properly comment on this document as if it were a plan when it fails to provide the basic elements that were required.
Thank you. Dr. Tariq Mahmood, followed by Ed Weinberg.
Yeah, good morning. My name is Dr. Tariq Mahmood. I own 10 acres of commercial properties along Route 206 in Flanders. I bought this property in 2003 to build a small commercial building. A site plan was prepared and submitted to the Township of Mount Island. First copy of the site plan was submitted around March, April 2003. Later, at the request of the Planning Board, Township of Mount Island, several changes were incorporated into the site plan. Several meetings were held with the Township Engineer. The Township ordinance required a lot of studies to be done for this property, traffic studies, environmental impact studies, wetland delineation, phase one, tree crown survey. On July 15, Township approved the site plan, 16,000 square feet building. On August 10, Highland Act was signed, retroactive date, March 29. As a result of this bill, I have been denied the right to build this property. That is absolutely unfair. This property is located in a well. There are office buildings across, there are office buildings on the left. So it's actually a fill-in area. In this site plan, there are only 2 acres of land which is going to be used, and the total area is 10 acres. So I would like to request the Highland Council look into it. This is actually a commercial area, heavily traveled, 206, and the only disturbance of 1.5 to 2 acres. So I would like to have the council look into see if a property can be built.
Thank you. Ed Wengren, followed by Jason Sapinski.
My name is Ed Wengren. I'm a resident of Ewing Township and a consumer of Highlands Water. I'm also a staff member at New Jersey Farm Bureau and was actively engaged in the legislative process during the passage of the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act. I work closely with our president, Rich Newmanhouse, Dr. Dye, from the State Board of Agriculture, and Monique Purcell from the Department of Agriculture, representing agriculture and forestry interests during the amending and passage of the Act. We held numerous meetings with Curtis Fisher and Don David Piero at the time, representing the Governor's Office, and with Senator Smith, the prime sponsor of the bill, as well as members of the Senate Environment Committee. From the beginning of our involvement, we worked hard to avoid the duplicative or separate process for agriculture production and development in the Highlands region. There was a strong system in place with right to farm, soil conservation districts, statewide support for agriculture. We did not see a need for a new system to establish or create a separate, more restrictive oversight of the industry that needs to be competitive not only intra and interstate, but internationally as well. This is where the blind to the line concept came from. There should not be separate standards for agriculture inside and outside the Highlands region, but an agreed upon process for agriculture development that takes the goals of natural resource protection in the Highlands and agricultural promotion. It is also argued that the forest landowners, following forest management plans, were also doing the right thing for the environment and the resources in the region, that they should not be subject to new or different standards for the region. It was recognized that there was not enough program support for these industries in the region. Funding for the conservation projects, forest stewardship initiatives, programs like integrated pest and crop management that reduce chemical and nutrient applications to crops. There was no marketing support for agriculture in the region to facilitate growth and promotion of agricultural markets like the Skylands Ag Program. It is why the council is charged with supporting and promoting agriculture in the region, but not regulating it. It is why we support the agriculture grant program the council has established. It's the kind of supportive program the region needs. Equity protection was the other major concern for us and our members. Short of a dedicated funding source for purchase of development rights and compensation for conservation easements, we cannot support the act on its own. As you've heard over the past few weeks, the land is the greatest resource a farmer has. It's a tool to produce crops as well as a tool to leverage capital investment. It's the basis of their financial health. It's why you are charged with developing a plan that takes into consideration and requires you to balance the conservation of environmental resource needs of the region with fairness and address the equity concerns of land ownership. When good planning is done, it can happen. Farmers and New Jersey Farm Bureau understand good planning. Farmers and foresters plan for the future all the time. Balancing crop growth with the natural resources is something they all do. It is that same common sense approach we used in adding the required plan elements. Identify areas for growth, prioritize lands for preservation and protection, develop an economic growth plan for the region, look at and improve the transportation system in the region, move products and people. It is the same very elements that are missing from the draft plan you released. It's why you've heard so much criticism of the draft plan. The very sections that address the economic resources, jobs, housing, and transportation are missing or incomplete. The TDR program that shifts growth away from areas that need protection to areas that accommodate growth is incomplete. Absent outside funding for acquisition, TDR is the logical compensation tool. We understand that in order for it to work, it cannot be rushed, but it's a key component that needs more attention. The draft plan lacks vision for the future of the region, what it will look like in 5 years, 10 years, 50 years. You need to take the comments you heard and go back and complete your work. The time frame outlined in the legislation is unrealistic to the task, but the longer this takes, the more frustrating it is for people and businesses in the region. You need to set a vision, a destination, so that people can understand and embrace. We need to know where we are going. Protecting everything and not planning for growth will not get us there. Every farmer and forester plans for growth for the future. You cannot go into the future without it. You need to make some hard decisions. You need to do it soon. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Jason, please, followed by Tom Gilbert.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. My name is Jason Stavinsky, and I'm an attorney with the law firm of Stearns & Weinrath. And I'm here to speak on behalf of several of our clients who are property owners in the Highlands region. I have very specific comments to certain sections in the plan I'd like to provide to the council. Section 2C, paragraph 11, page 32. The regional master plan acknowledges that water and wetlands are evenly distributed within both the planning area and the preservation area. If these waters and wetlands areas are evenly distributed, you have to question whether the boundary line drawn by the legislature makes sense if the goal of the Highlands Act is to preserve clean drinking water. Section 3B, pages 46 to 47 of the Regional Master Plan. We question why it is necessary to create protection, conservation zones, and planned community zones within the planning and the preservation areas. Isn't the preservation area one large protection zone? The council is empowered by the Highlands Act to designate special areas within the preservation area that cannot be developed. Where is the council's statutory authority to designate such areas within the planning area? Placement of planning area within the protection zone overlay is contrary to the explicit language in the Act, which permits the council to, and I quote, preserve to the maximum extent possible, end quote, these environmentally sensitive areas, not to prohibit development. And I'm quoting from New Jersey statute section 13:20-10C2. Creation of these special zones undermines and ignores the boundaries set by the legislature and the Highlands Act. If these boundaries are not correct, There are areas within the planning area that should be within the preservation area, and vice versa. The legislature and or the council should re-examine these boundaries set forth in the Act and protect the correct watersheds, waters, and wetlands, and other environmentally sensitive areas without burning properties that do not fall within these categories. Section 3, paragraph C, 2, lowercase d. I'm referring to pages 110 and 111 of the Regional Master Plan. There is no statutory authority to regulate areas designated critical habitat areas where the species is of special concern and is not a state threatened or endangered or federally endangered species, and the habitat ranking is landscape rank 2. Page 112. Prohibition of all development in the planning area where the area is a critical habitat, where the property lies within the conservation zone overlays, is contrary to the Act. And these go to our comments in section 3B that I previously made. Page 119. We're glad to see there's going to be the establishment of a water conservation and consumption fee, but there's no details provided as to how this fee is going to be enforced and what this fee is going to be. And we think that should have been provided in the draft regional master plan. Finally, section 3D7, page 180. This addresses the TDR program. New Jersey Statute 13:20-13B required the council to identify sending and receiving zones within the preservation area within 18 months of enactment of the Highlands Act. These zones should have been identified by our calculations by March of 2006. To date, the council has not identified any of these zones. The council had no authority to ignore or extend the deadline set by the legislature in adopting the RMP or identifying these zones and establishing a TDR program to provide relief to property owners within the preservation area. The RMP does not identify any specific time by which these sending and receiving zones will be identified. When will the zones be identified, and when will the TDR program be operational? What will the turnaround be for Highlands Development Credits applications made to the council for allocation of credits? These questions aren't answered in the Regional Master Plan. Finally, my last comment is page 184, also has to do with the TDR program. Allocation of TDR credits should be based upon the DEP rules and regulations in effect on August 9, 2004. This is explicitly provided in the Highlands Act as New Jersey Statute 13:20-13H1. The council has no authority to adjust the number of credits based upon the property's location in the Highlands region or the relative value of Highlands resources on the property, and this is provided in the Regional Master Plan. Any Highlands issues cannot be considered in setting a TDR value on the lot pursuant to the Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Gilbert, followed by Judy McConnell.
Good morning. My name is Tom Gilbert, and I'm Director of Eastern Forest Conservation with the Wilderness Society, and also serve as Acting Chair of the Board of the Four-State Highlands Coalition. As the former Executive Director of the Highlands Coalition, I was pleased to be a member of Governor Reedy's Highlands Task Force and to contribute towards the passage of the Highlands Water Protection Planning Act. First and foremost, I would like to commend the members and staff of the Highlands Council for the excellent and enormous body of work you have done to prepare the draft regional master plan. Under difficult circumstances, including the loss of several key staff and council members, while you were in the throes of an already Herculean task. From my review of the draft RMP, it appears that the plan is heading in the right direction and is in keeping with the intent of the task force and the legislation. I applaud you for being blind to the line in identifying the protection and conservation zones so that critical environmental areas that fall outside of the preservation area are identified and targeted for appropriate conservation measures. However, I am concerned that you don't appear to have identified no-build zones in the most environmentally sensitive areas that should be subject to zero development, as the legislation empowers you to do. I urge you to exercise this authority, perhaps in conjunction with the TDR program, whereby no-build zones might be designated as sending areas in order to compensate landowners in addition to outright purchase by the state. Land acquisition in these and other priority areas you have identified will require a significant investment from all levels of government and the private sector, as you noted in the plan. I urge you to continue to be vocal advocates for the state and federal funds that will be essential to fully and permanently protect the region. Priority one is to replenish the Garden State Preservation Trust this year. Several of the same state legislators who championed the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act are also leading the way on GSPT renewal trend. While in the U.S. Senate, Governor Corzine was among the leaders of the effort to pass the Federal Highlands Conservation Act, which pledged $100 million over 10 years to help the Highland states protect priority lands. Thus far, Congress has not made good on that pledge. The governor should continue his leadership on the Highlands by working with our congressional delegation to secure those federal funds, and also by working with state legislative leaders to place a question on the ballot this fall to renew the GSBT with a dedicated funding source. In closing, I want to thank you for your tremendous efforts, and I'm sure that future generations will thank you as well.
Thank you.
I have spoken before, so I will defer to others until the end of the sitting.
Gary Steinfield.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. My name is Gary Steinfield. I'm the principal of Blue Vista Consultants. I'm here on behalf of property owners for property in, located in Roxbury, New Jersey. I'd like to read a letter into the record and leave my copies of the letter as well as some related documentation. So GMA LA manager REO is the owner of approximately 63 acres of property comprising block 9202, lot 1, 2, 9, and 10 in the township of Roxbury, New Jersey. More specifically, this property is located in the southeast quadrant of the Route 80 and Route 206 interchange. But this property is located in the Highlands planning area. We recently became aware that pursuant to the Highland Council's regional draft plan released on November 30, 2006, the council's proposal to place nearly all this property, along with several adjoining properties, into a newly defined protection zone that would essentially make it impossible to secure development approvals of any kind. The owners of the subject property wish to go on record as strongly objecting to the council's characterization of the majority of this property suitable to be placed into a protection zone, which is wholly inconsistent with rational planning in a regional context and the stated policies of the draft regional plan itself. We'd like to further go on record as strongly requesting that the entire subject property instead be placed into a planned community zone, which conversely is consistent with rational planning in a regional context and the policy stated in the draft plan itself. In support of this request, we are submitting to the Council a technical review memo dated January 20, 2007, prepared by Allman Engineering Associates, a highly regarded and experienced engineering firm located in Cedar Knoll, New Jersey. I'd like to take a few minutes of the Council's time to highlight a few of the supporting points of our request. Placing the subject property into a planned community zone is highly consistent with several major policy areas of the draft regional master plan, including resource assessment, smart growth, consistency and coordination, and local participation. With regard to the resource assessment component of the draft master plan, the following should be noted. The subject property is serviced by a public water system that has available capacity to service the subject property. While the subject property contains wetlands and steep slope areas, the features of the subject property are similar to properties in the three other quadrants of the Route 80 and 206 interchange that are all proposed to be placed into planned community zones. The subject property does not contain any threatened or endangered species. The subject area is not an agricultural area. The subject area is located at a major highly trafficked interchange, and therefore development of this area will not materially impact air quality. Much of the subject area being proposed for this protection zone has already been developed, and placing it into a protection zone adversely impacts property values and ownership rights. The subject area has no identified historic or cultural features. The northern portion of the subject property has already been deemed suitable for inclusion into an adjoining planned community zone. With regard to the smart growth component of the draft plan, the following should be noted. Placing the subject area in the protection zone is not consistent with the regional planning approach, given the subject area's proximity to the Nedcom Town Center, major highway and rail infrastructure, and the proposed active adult community on the former Muscle Rail site to the north, the Poets Peak residential subdivision to the east, and the ITC Crossing Retail Center to the west. Placing the subject area into a planned community zone is consistent with the regional planning approach, given the proximity of the subject area to the aforementioned developed properties. The subject area can be developed in a responsible manner that minimizes the impacts to the natural and cultural resources of the Highlands. The subject property, which comprises a large portion of the subject area, is located closest to the Route 80, Route 206 interchange, and is zoned for commercial uses consistent with appropriate local and regional land planning policies that will create significant economic development opportunity, which will in turn produce meaningful jobs and tax revenues. The subject area is located within the Muscadet County Sewer Authority service area, which has available capacity to service the subject area. The subject area is located at a major highway interchange, providing high-level regional and interstate mobility. The development of the subject area will be guided by applicable municipal, county, and state regulations that will enforce adequate environmental and land capacity constraints. With regard to the consistency and coordination and local participation components of the draft regional master plan, the following should be noted. The designation of the subject area as a protection zone is clearly not consistent with its location at a major highway interchange, nor is it coordinated with the proposed designation of the three other quadrants of this interchange as planned community zones. The designation of the subject area as a protection zone is clearly not consistent with allowing for, quotes, the maximum feasible local government and public input, end of quotes, for the development of the originally defined planning area. The subject area has been assessed through Roxbury's master planning process to be appropriate for commercial development. Furthermore, Roxbury Township and the Sewer Authority have developed a comprehensive plan for the subject area, including utility services to support its master plan and total zoning. It should also be noted that the draft regional master plan states that 640 acres or 1 square mile is to be the minimum mapping threshold for identification of a protection zone. The subject area proposed to be designated as a protection zone contains approximately 100 acres, falling substantially short of the minimum mapping threshold. In summary, based on a thorough review of the November 30th draft 2006 draft Highlands Regional Master Plan, the rationale behind the Council's proposed designation of the subject area as a protection zone within the Highlands planning area is flawed and inconsistent with sound regional planning principles, as well as the policy set forth within the draft plan itself. Instead, the subject area should be designated as a planned community zone, which is far more consistent with the draft planning policies, the character of the subject site and area, the character and zone designations of the immediate surrounding region, and local planning initiatives. In closing, the owners of the block 9202 lots 1 through 9 and 10 in the township of Roxbury prepared to meet with Highlands Council staff as appropriate to discuss the merits of our position in greater detail. On behalf of the members of the owners of the subject property, I'd like to thank the council members for the prompt consideration of our comments and requests. This is signed by Tajima LA Manager REO James Reardon, an authorized representative. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are you submitting
those, right? Is that you or put it in the back?
I'll put it in the back.
Okay, thank you.
Scott Smith. Followed by Mary Harris.
I'm just going to submit her comments.
Okay, thank you. Mary Harris has spoken before. I'm sorry, you have spoken. Okay, yeah. Okay, we'll get to you shortly. Greg Ackers. And followed by Neil DeVito.
Good morning. My name is Fred Akers. I'm a landowner in the Pine Lands. I own 15 acres of the Pine Lands, and I'm very happy as a Pine Lands landowner, and it seems that my property the values just keep going up. I get about a dozen letters from realtors every year asking me if I want to sell my property. But I really came to talk about Wild and Scenic Rivers because as a profession, I'm the administrator of the Great Egg Harbor Watershed Association. And the Great Egg Harbor River was the first partnership Wild and Scenic River in the country. And now there are 9 partnership Wild and Scenic Rivers, 4 of which are in New Jersey, and 1 of which was just recently designated in the Highlands, which is the Musconetcom River. And I would like to recommend that the Musconetcom Wild and Scenic River and its boundaries be be prominently delineated in your planning. And this is extremely important because Partnership Wild Scenic River designation doesn't bring much additional rules or regulations with it. The designation serves more as a theme or like a continual ask for strict compliance to existing environmental regulations to protect the resources that now have a federal value in addition to a state value. So it's very important to have that prominently documented. We have found that over time, people forget about the designation. New people come in, new consultants come in, they propose developments. They don't see that Wild and Scenic River designation. And I spend a lot of time reminding people and trying to represent that. So that's pretty important, and that's really what I came to tell you.
Thanks very much. I'm Neil Levito, followed by Stanley Bosak. Neil Levito? No? Okay. If you want to raise that on the middle piece there.
I think we are. Good morning. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Dr. Emil DeVito, a PhD in zoology and botany, specializing in the conservation of biological diversity. And I've been the manager of science and stewardship at the New Jersey Conservation Foundation for nearly 20 years. I'm also a trustee of the New Jersey Natural Lands Trust and a member of the New Jersey Endangered and Non-Game Species Advisory Committee. I'm here to comment primarily on the forest integrity, stewardship, and critical habitat portions of the plan. And I want to applaud the Highlands Council members and staff for focusing so highly on the key element of the Highlands, which is core forest habitat. You note that 44% of the Highlands forest is still classified as core forest habitat. And you define that using parameters such as core area, patch size, distance to other patches, and other forest metrics that are strongly supported in the conservation biology literature, ecological restoration literature, and the other literature having to do with the conservation of natural resources, the conservation of biological diversity, and long-term habitat protection that has developed in the last 20 years in the field of conservation biology. And I strongly urge you to continue to use that literature, that science, that field as the fundamental underlying organizing principle as you go forward with the development of this plan and the future standards and pre-conformance requirements. I'm very pleased to see such an emphasis on the protection of things like vernal pools, significant natural areas, the concerns for the development of habitat management and conservation plans in the future on both a small scale and a regional basis, the concern for the potential impacts of invasive species and bioherbivory. All these things are visionary. It's high time that we pay as much attention to them as we can so that we can make sure that this forest resource is protected, not just for 5 years or 10 years, so that there's some nice trees to look at, but so that we have a functional ecosystem that's providing, you know, in 100 years, one that's providing ecosystem services, one that's protecting our most sensitive and uncommon natural resources that live in those core forests. And we all know that the core forest itself best protects our water resources, since the core forests are not subject to erosion, pollution, fragmentation, and all the incursions by the rapidly sprawling society that we live in. So again, I want to stress that I think you're on the right track and that it's very important that as you move from this plan to the pre-conformance requirements, that you uphold this vision that you have here and that you develop clear and strong protective standards with well-defined benchmarks that will ultimately lead to this long-term protection. I have one concern about an item in the plan regarding in the future when forest conservation easements are purchased with public money by the state, that there's an indication that those easements might possibly be held by the Department of Agriculture. I don't think that's appropriate. The Highlands Act treats the Highlands Forest as a sustainable ecological resource that provides clean water, critical habitat, and a wide variety of public benefits, and is not simply treating the Highlands Forest as a rotational crop. And so the only division within the state to be able to hold forest conservation easements that has the data, the resources, the personnel, and the expertise is the Department of Environmental Protection. And so if we're going to protect forest integrity, and we're going to make sure that those natural resource values continue to provide these services for us well into the next century, and I mean the next century, not this one, that the DEP should be the agency that is staffed and funded and provided the resources that it needs to manage these conservation initiatives. Thank you very much. Also, I just want to say I applaud the members of the Highlands Council and staff for doing this massive overlay of data sets and developing all the various areas and zones. You've used the best available technology that we have today. You've crunched a massive amount of data, unlike anything that's ever been done before in the history of the state. And I applaud that, and I hope that you continue to use that data and use the best available science and the best available ecological literature, applied ecological literature for conservation and restoration. In coming up with your long-term protection standards. Thank you.
Thank you. Stanley Bojack, followed by Allison Mitchell.
Hi, I'm Stan Bojack. I presently moved up to the preservation area. The property that I'm referring to is Block 48, Lot 9, and Lot 8.01. Which was owned by my father since 1952 and passed on to me sometime after his death. He died in 1980. I don't know all the technical data about this plan, but all I know is how seriously that I've been affected from it. Just to give you a little knowledge about my father, well, he was a conservationist, and I'm a second generation conservationist. He loved the property. He allowed people to hunt on it, although he would sit out in the woods with his shotgun, but he didn't have the heart to shoot it either. He loved the wildlife. He bought a swamp area, which at the time was just a mosquito-infested thing that nobody wanted. This is what I own now. It's the 50 acres that I managed to hang on to out of the 100 acres that he used to own. And as soon as I was old enough to get away from my mother, he started bringing me up there. And our family spent all our summers on this property. This was our only recreation area. He allowed Boy Scouts to camp on the property on a regular basis. He constructed three ponds in the wetland area, which today would be a grievous sin, you know. They sustain more wildlife than they ever would have if it was just left with just a swamp with a bunch of pumps, we used to call them, growing out of it. There's an example of that right on the corner, which is near his property, where you never see a duck land there. We have different species of duck land in our ponds. As far as fishing, one of the speakers mentioned catching fish. As a kid, I used to catch sunnies two and three at a time with my hands, you know, scooping right out of the pond. We'd feed them bread. We had sunnies, goldfish, and catfish at the time. Then a scoutmaster threw some largemouth bass in there and wiped out the goldfish and the catfish. So it was just largemouth bass now and sunnies. While he was excavating to build one of the ponds, one of my second cousins discovered a bone. He was into collecting fossils and things, so he brought it to his grandmother's house, who lived right nearby. Turned out it was a part of a mastodon skeleton. So one thing led to another. He allowed students, some college students, to come in and dig it up. And as far as I understand, I never went to see it. I was hoping to see it today, but it's assembled here in the museum. It's a mastodon skeleton, which he donated. Just trying to give you some idea how important this land is to me. Where do I go from here? I'm going to check my notes. But as it stands today, well, right, my father died in 1980, and things didn't go too well after he died. In 1988, an older sister of mine, who was supposed to get a house that was on this property in her name, died in a fire. So I have my three older sisters. They couldn't hang on to their share of the property, but I managed to hang on to 50 acres in the wetland. And this is, my father went up here every weekend, no matter what. There was never a weekend missed. If he had something important, so we lived in Linden, and the property I mentioned is up in Great Meadows, Liberty Township. If he had something important to do, business-wise, family-wise, he would go to whatever the event was and go right back up to the country, as we called it. And he'd work every weekend. After a while, I started to hide from him. I had to work with him.
Can I ask you, what is it you want the Highlands Council to do or say about your land?
Well, just to take in consideration the people that are being affected by this. And maybe this might make a little sense. There was a statement when John Kerry was running for presidency. One statement he made, which sort of sums up everything that our country is supposed to be about. Every individual counts. And with this plan, I don't believe every individual counts. I have two sisters who are now, they're in low-income housing. A niece who has multiple sclerosis. I just had a cousin who died from multiple sclerosis. Our only hope to live in our own home for my sisters. I want to share this with my sisters. That's all I want to be made a note of, that this property has been in my life all my life. It's been our only family thing. And now it's being taken away. I'm allowed to build one house on 50 acres. And there's no concern from anyone in this council. It's, well, that's the way it goes, you know. I just want every individual to count in this thing, and that's what I'm hoping that the Highlands Council will do. That's what.
Thank you. Followed by John Finney.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to comment on the draft regional master plan. My name is Allison Mitchell. I'm the policy director of the New Jersey Conservation Foundation, a statewide private land conservation organization that has been working to protect the Highlands for the past 17 years. I'm also a resident of Hunterdon County, and I began my work in New Jersey compiling information about the resources of this incredible nationally significant region, which is all the more amazing given its location in this populated part of the country. And I thank the council and its staff for their hard work in developing the draft regional master plan. In passing the Highlands Act, the legislature found and declared that the protection of the Highlands is, quote, an issue of state-level importance that cannot be left to the uncoordinated land use decisions of the Highlands municipalities, seven counties, and a myriad of private landowners. And we know from experience that strong regional planning approaches work. The New Jersey Pinelands Comprehensive Management Plan is a perfect example. Land use decisions affecting the resources of this region, about which you have heard considerable testimony, are far too important to the future of the state as a whole to be made on an ad hoc, dispersed basis. There is much at stake, perhaps nothing more important than the drinking water for over 5 million people and 65% of the state's population. The draft Highlands Regional Master Plan aims to protect this critical water supply, forests, which are critical to water protection, wildlife habitat, farmland, historic, cultural, recreational, and scenic resources. And there are many very good natural resource policies and protections within the draft for which we are grateful and which we strongly urge the council to retain. I will touch on a few of these and we'll be submitting more detailed written comments. What is needed as the process moves forward before plan conformance, and something that was key to the success of the Highlands Plan, are standards and specific measurable results towards which the plan is targeted. An effective and efficient plan conformance process by which municipalities opt in to the plan will also be necessary to ensure that protection happens in both the preservation and the planning areas. In terms of provisions of the draft, we applaud the allocation of nearly two-thirds of the Highlands to the protection zone, which spans both preservation and planning areas. We urge the council to go further and to identify and designate in the RMP special areas within which development shall not occur, as stipulated in the Highlands Act, with compensation to owners through various mechanisms. We are concerned that agricultural lands and prime soils are not adequately protected within the draft plan, and we urge you to implement the requirement of the Act that incentives be developed for limiting building on farms preserved in the region. This is critical to the protection of water resources. We urge the council to remove the ability for cluster development in the agricultural section because it might require new sewage infrastructure or package plans. If the better agricultural soils are set aside, then cluster development will be located on the poorer agricultural soils, the land least stable to handle wastewater from package plant systems or individual septics. Finally, we support the Regional Master Plan's endorsement of the reauthorization of the Garden State Preservation Trust, and we pledge that we and our partners in the Green Campaign will work hard to ensure reauthorization this year so the precious land is not lost while we wait for state funds to continue New Jersey's nationally recognized preservation program. The state got it right in the Pine Lands, in large measure, because the plan for the region was clear and very strong. Creation of that type of plan required the framers of the plan to be courageous. We urge the council to do justice to the Highlands region and its critical importance to the future of New Jersey by strengthening this draft, creating strong incentives for planning area communities to opt in, and immediately laying out specific objectives for where plan implementation will take the region. The plan is heading in the right direction, no question about it. We look forward to its completion. Thank you.
Thank you. John Finney, followed by Damian Newton.
Good morning. My name is John Thonay, and I'm a private environmental planning and engineering consultant. I've been working in the state of New Jersey for over a quarter of a century, providing environmental consulting services to land developers and municipalities with regard to land development projects and land use planning programs. I have been a proponent of strong regional planning for environmental purposes for my entire career, and an equally strong proponent of transfer development rights programs as the best way to equitably provide environmental protection in the state of New Jersey. I have read the entire regional plan, page by page, and including many of the technical support documents on which that plan was based. My conclusion is that this is an unbelievably good plan. It is well thought out and well based. And I want you to go jump to the conclusions that I'm not going to have some constructive criticism in writing, because there are certainly lots of little details that need to be explored further. But I think at this juncture, what's important for me to say is that you guys have done a very good job, and in my entire career, this is the most significant piece of regional planning that I have seen. Now, having said that, I want to... For those of you that know me, I don't say good things about regional planning easily. I'm a very critical person when it comes to protecting the environment. And I'm also just as critical with regard to preserving property values. And this is the second part of the plan that I think is particularly important. The plan proposes the use of a transfer development rights program, in part, and perhaps the major part of the plan, for preserving equity or preserving property values. I've been to a couple of these hearings, and it should come of no surprise to the members of the council that the biggest concern raised by property owners within the Highlands is the issue of their property values. And so I applaud this council for having included as a fundamental part of this plan a TDR program. The reason that TDR programs are important in that it does add another layer of preservation to the Highlands area, that in combination with preserving
the environmental attributes of the highlands, including, most importantly, its water resources. It also preserves property values if done correctly. I will acknowledge that at the present time, the DDR program appears to be more conceptual than real. And so, if there is a recommendation that I could make to the council now, it would be to please pull out all the stops on ensuring that this TDR program becomes a real program. Because in the final analysis, the measure of the success of the Highlands program is not going to be measured by how well it protects the region's resources, because surely it will do that. It will also be measured by how well it has protected the property values of the farmers and other landowners within the Highlands. And I'm sure, from having read all the reports, that this council is up to that task. Thank you.
Thank you. Jane.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm Damian Newton, the New Jersey coordinator for the Tri-State Transportation Campaign. While I'm not one of the familiar faces you see at every meeting you hold, we have been active in the Highlands. I've been on the Transportation Advisory Committee. I've made it to a few hearings to testify, and we've submitted written comments on some Highlands exemptions that the DEP receives. I'm here today to talk about transportation because I know there's some DOT reps in the back of the room and I want to give them some notes since there hasn't been a lot of discussion of that so far. At first glance, and the first time I read through this plan, I thought, wow, this thing's great. It actually reads like one of our brochures from the mid-90s when transportation planning in New Jersey hadn't gotten to the advanced stage that it is now. However, as I read more and more, I noticed that there's some vague language, some loopholes. And while I'm going to discuss three things of concern now, we will submit more lengthy written comments. I do want to say that we do overall think it's very good and it's certainly moving in the right direction, but before final adoption, we think there's just some things that need to be done. The first is, in a lot of areas, the language is very vague, creating loopholes that we joke in the office, you can drive a truck through because, I don't know, that's the kind of jokes we tell in our office. The example that we use here is that it says repeatedly that it requires that pervious surfaces be minimized in transportation projects. But outside of that, it doesn't say how we decide, you know, what that means, be minimized. There's no standard, there's no, for moving X amount of vehicles or X amount of people, this amount of impervious surface, nothing like that, access into and out of developments, what kind of roadway networks needed, what kind of pedestrian. It doesn't go into those kind of details. And when you just say surfaces be minimized, if a permit's rejected on that and then another one's accepted that has a similar thing because the language is a little vague, it just leaves you vulnerable to, you know, delays and lawsuits and appeals. And we don't want to see that. So we'd like to see just some sort of firm numbers put in there. One of our second things is, maybe this is just me, but it references the site plan and design standards for how projects should move forward. And I couldn't find out what that was. I looked around the website for a while and I made a call or two to people and no one seemed to be able to give me exactly what that is. So it may be difficult for me to sort of provide lengthy comments on it because it seems to be really important, but I couldn't find out what it was, and if at the risk of sounding self-important, if I couldn't find out, and I'm, you know, paid to write testimonies and things like that, I think a member of the public would have similar problems. Maybe not. Maybe, you know, a quick Google search and they'd come up with it, but I didn't. My third thing is, while I didn't mention it by name, the plan seemed to endorse the Lackawanna Cutoff Project. I don't think that they're on record right now. There's a bigger transportation project planned for the Highlands region, and we hope that a project of its size would go through the Highland permitting process. And our concern is that if you put language in that says, that implies that a project like that will be good, it's going to make it difficult to objectively look at the project when it does come up for permits. I know the EA for the project just came out recently, and it seemed to support a lot of the findings. However, just looking at the basic amount of trains and trackage and storage that's available, New Jersey Transit really doesn't have the ability to expand right now. When they finish their second rail tunnel into New York City, they will, but that's 10 years from now. So it's going to be a little while before we see the cutoff anyway, even if everyone decides it's the greatest thing in the world and should be built immediately. We're not saying that. But if everyone were to say that, it would still be a while. We just don't think that putting language into a plan like this at this stage is appropriate, because it will create biases when the permitting process does come up later. I have a bunch of language in my written testimony about why cutoff's not necessarily the best idea, but I'm just going to throw one thing at the one Transportation Advisory Committee meeting that was held up in their headquarters. Rich Roberts from New Jersey Transit said, according to their studies, it would take this rail line, which is estimated at $500 million, would take 2% of the traffic off the local highways. And that just seems like a lot of money that could be spent on other things, maybe a real bus plan with modern buses and some routing technology to give them better access that would move a lot more people. Sort of one last thing is in reading it, we didn't see anything that supported the ideas of rail freight, and I know that's a very touchy issue in areas. Rail freight, moving cargo by rail instead of by truck. However, a study that we did, which was actually just rehashing some federal numbers, estimates that truck traffic in New Jersey, and it's even worse in the Highlands area as far as future growth projections than it is in the area I live in, around in East Rutherford, closer to the port. But truck traffic is going to grow by 80% statewide in the next 20 years. It's worse in Sussex and Warren and Huntington counties right now, because there's not as many trucks there as there could be. And really, when we talk about trying to minimize the impacts of trucks, the best way to do that is to have less trucks on the road. And unfortunately, with New Jersey's status as a freight corridor, well, fortunately for the people that have the jobs, because it's a tremendous boon to New Jersey's economy status as a freight corridor, but unfortunately for environment and transportation needs, is we're going to have to make choices between trucks and trains. And we think that our organization supports the idea that more trains means less trucks. And literally, one train with cars could take anywhere between 300 and 3,000 trucks off the road, which is just an enormous impact. And so we think that should be included also in the plan, encouraging more rail freight. And I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sir, you mentioned some areas in the plan that aren't specific enough. If you would like to give us some examples of being more specific, we'd appreciate it.
Oh, well, I'll have written comments that'll have more of that in. I wanted a chance to say it to you, and we'll have all that for you in the next couple of weeks. So thank you.
Michael Portell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Michael Forcella. We own land at Sparta Lake, Sparta, New Jersey, Block 3.12, Lot 21, Number 9, Aspen Road, Block 3.12, Lot 22, Number 11, Aspen Road. This land was a gift over 20 years ago from grandparents with great pride and enthusiasm, under the assumption that we had a piece of the American dream. On December 31st, 2006, we were served a lawsuit by the Sparta Lake Property Association for delinquent mandatory property association dues for an association that we had no prior knowledge was active or that dues were mandatory. We moved in 2004 and received no voting mail from the Sparta Lake Property Association, although tax bills and some other notices were forwarded. We have learned further that it is an intent of the Sparta Lake Property Owners Association to assess all property owners in Sparta Lake several thousands of dollars to replace a failing dam, and that this dam could cost several hundreds of thousands of dollars. That the Sparta Lake Property Owner Association claims that Sparta Lake was deeded to the Sparta Lake Property Owners Association on December 21st, 1928, and that this deed granted an easement the lake, an ownership easement to the lake to all property owners. At the passing of the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act of August 10, 2004, and certain other ordinances introduced by the Township of Sparta may have made our property worthless. The Sparta Lake Property Owners Association does not appear to intentionally mean to harm us or anyone else by these actions. Recently, we had the opportunity to meet several families, and they seem to be good people who are trying to retain their American dream. But regretfully for the Sparta Lake Property Owners Association and for all citizens of the state of New Jersey, and my personal comments are not intended to be disrespectful or with malice toward anyone. The Sparta Lake Property Owners Association has not stayed properly informed of these issues over the past years. The Sparta Lake Property Owner Association lacks intrinsic knowledge in property association management, and as such, their actions may constitute negligence of their fiduciary responsibility. The Sparta Lake Property Owners Association may be in direct violation of the terms and conditions of the May 21st, 1928 deed, granting the Sparta Lake Property Owners Association ownership of Sparta Lake. For these and possible other reasons, under review, the motives of the Sparta Lake Property Owners Association may be actionable. It is our opinion that several lawsuits may be filed against the Sparta Lake Property Owners Association and its board of directors, and that the Sparta Lake Property Owners Association will not have the financial means of defense and could go into bankruptcy, and that the bankruptcy could mean total neglect and eventual draining of Sparta Lake, which I understand is supported by many who do not have the finances to support the Sparta Lake Property Owners Association and rebuilding of this dam. Members of the committee, this problem is real and eventual. Inaction on your part to intervene to Sparta Lake has a chilling effect on this water supply you are trying to protect. You are our only hope. Township of Sparta has abandoned the voters and taxpayers of Sparta Lake. They came to the state of New Jersey in 2000 when for rescue after flooding in their township, and you gave it to them. Since Sparta Lake, located in Sparta Township, New Jersey, is the beginning of the drainage area which becomes Rusher Brook and then the Rockaway River, and since the Rockaway River is the sole source of water supply for the 9 billion gallon Jersey City reservoir, and since Sparta Lake is under the threat of being neglected and drained, and since the future of Sparta Lake may be necessary to maintain the current quality of the Highlands water and the whole drainage area of the watershed, and since Sparta Lake recharges the aquifers, provides flood control, erosion control, enhances water quality, protects and nourishes the ecosystem, and provides flow into streams and rivers during dry conditions. Since Sparta Lake should be included in the goals and elements of the Highland Regional Master Plan, in consideration of all these ecosystem benefits to the state of New Jersey, this commission must, and you are requested, to include the requirement that the state of New Jersey provide funding for the improvement of Sparta Lake in order to protect and maintain the ecosystem and water quality within the Highlands region, which is what we believe is the intent of the Act and still could be the American dream. Thank you.
Thank you. We heard now from about half the people who signed up to speak. I believe that everyone, well, they asked this question. Is there anyone who has not spoken to any of the five previous Highlands Council public hearings who would like to speak today?
Good morning. I'm Candace Ashman. As you know, I've had a good deal of experience with regional planning, both as a member of the Planning Commission and the State Planning Commission. And just for the record straight, I'm still a member of the Planning Commission. Just before I start, I wanted to tell you I will be handing to your staff the annual economic monitoring report from the climate for 2006. In the material that you put before us, the policies are clear, well supported by data, and I really thank you for the opportunity to comment at this point in your planning process. I find these materials more than adequate for intelligent comment. But now you have the hard part ahead of you, and now you must set standards, actions that will implement these policies. At this point, you have a plan to plan. You don't have a complete plan, and one of the reasons I think you're getting negative comment is the fear of the unknown, because no one knows what the standards will be, nor the requirements to meet these policies. I have two suggestions for you. I urge you to augment your staff now with national experts to assist in developing plan standards and how-tos. That's really the hard part. And then lastly, I would say, unfortunately, you won't want to hear this, but I think that once you've got those standards, and once you have a plan, and you're going to need to redo this whole hearing process, because it won't be fair. We're really commenting on the background for the plan and not on the plan. So I would urge you to remember that public comment will be very important when you get to that point of having a complete plan. Thank you.
Good morning. I am Robert Matarazzo. I'm a member of the State Board of Agriculture. I'm also a third-generation farmer in Warren County. The State Board of Agriculture is an eight-member body which sets policies that direct the Secretary and the Department of Agriculture in carrying out its duties and responsibilities. There are other members of the board here present. We have a State Board meeting this afternoon that we hope to come up with a formal letter to present to you. This is just a part of that letter. We believe that the Highlands Draft Regional Master Plan has set forth a very aggressive framework for protecting the important natural resources of the Highlands region. While a great deal of work went into the development of this draft plan, it is clear much more work and public discussion remains ahead before the critical details of the policy strategies and standards outlined in the draft plan can actually be implemented. After reviewing the draft plan, we believe that it is essential that the agricultural community be represented and fully engaged in developing those details, as there are many questions and concerns about how the zone standards may potentially impact agriculture operations. And I can assure you that the State Board stands ready and able to help you in those decisions. We are also unsure about how the standards for the agricultural resource area will relate to the specific zone standards. We fully understand and support the need to protect our water supply. However, as we plan to protect this valuable resource and the other natural, agricultural, and cultural resources of our Highlands communities, we must do so in a way that is fair and equitable to the people who live and work in the Highlands, including our farm families and woodland owners. In your own report shows a dramatic decline in agricultural in the Highlands area. If you want to not only protect the water supply, but keep agriculture viable, can't read my own writing, sorry. You will need to provide substantial funding for this project, and I'm sure that's on your mind. Agriculture is a dynamic and changing yet fragile business that's impacted by many variables, including land values. And it's not only in the Highlands, but throughout the state. This is, you've brought it to the attention of the farmers now. The Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act, the accompanying DEP Highlands rules, and the recently released draft regional master plan have had a negative effect on the value of land in the Highlands region. I'll just make a comment. I just came from a conference last week, where there was a whole lot of farmers that came up to me and said, from the Pinelands, don't allow to happen in the Highlands what happened to us in the Pinelands. It took 25 years for them to get their values back to something that they had, some equity that they could go to the banks for loans for. 25 years. There's not a farmer in this Highlands region that can wait 25 years for that to happen. A significant amount of the privately held land in the Highlands region is owned by farmers and woodland owners. The value of farmland and woodland directly relates to a farmer's ability to maintain their net worth and secure the most reasonable operating loans in order to remain productive and viable. The Highlands region provides drinking water to more than 5 million people in New Jersey. It is therefore unreasonable to expect that the burden of preserving this water supply should be shouldered by only a small percentage of those who benefit from it. The plan must adhere to the intent and all of the provisions of the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act to be sustainable and economically viable. We believe that this plan will only be successful if, number one, a dedicated source of funding separate and apart from PT2 is identified for land and easement acquisition of the Highlands to permanently protect these lands while compensating property owners, and that a viable private sector driven TDR program is created and implemented that aids in preserving our important resources while promoting growth in appropriate areas. The voluntary nature of the proposed program continues to cause us great concern. I think you will need to gain legislative support to require the use of TDR for any additional development plans in the Highlands. Funding is provided, and number three, that funding is provided for conservation planning to implement soil, water, and natural resource conservation practices, similar to what the last gentleman was just asking for, on our agricultural lands to ensure the continued stewardship of these resources into the future. The agriculture community is committed to working together with you to develop a regional master plan that is fair, equitable, responsible, and one that considers the varied interests of all those affected. We ask that you consider appointing or allowing for one or two members of the state board to serve as advisors, at least when you start dealing with the equity issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Dave Shepherd. I'm also a member of the State Board of Agriculture. I'm representing the vegetable growers in the state of New Jersey. And I'm mostly going to speak on the immediate economic effect of the finance plan, of the Highlands plan. The need to protect our water supply is an issue of utmost importance. I support the state's interest in protecting this valuable resource. As farmers, we have contributed greatly to the maintaining and protecting of this important part of our business. Agricultural lands provide for 1 million gallons per acre per year of water recharge, filtering, and storage capacity. We do this valuable service for all the citizens of the state of New Jersey, and no cost to them. We only ask for a small portion of this water to ensure the survival of the crops we produce for the nation we feed. Farming today is not just about planting and harvesting. The farmers must be able to make sound business decisions before planting a seed. If a farmer cannot show on paper the profitability of his business, profitability in his business can be, a banker will never lend him the capital needed to operate. Bankers that are making operating loans need to have collateral that will justify those loans if a farmer cannot meet the repayment obligation. These operating loans may only be covered if the farmer can use the value of his land as collateral.
If the state takes a large portion of this value away, a large portion of the farmer's collateral is gone. For example, if the land is currently valued at $12,000 an acre, and the plan reduces that value to $4,000 an acre, in many cases, this could, in fact, put the farmer out of business. Additionally, the farmer uses their land to fund their retirement, children's education, health needs, and savings. Furthermore, just having the state say they may take this value away may cause havoc to the business. It also puts other landowners around the state on notice that the state may seize their land equity at any time. Despite personal desires to maintain farmland, this threat may already be causing people to sell to developers. Before this plan can be used, it must have an equity compensation to which the landowner can immediately have access. And it's important to immediately have access, because a banker will not loan you money if he thinks you may not have equity in your land. Moreover, in order to keep the Highlands Water Protection area economically viable, there must be provisions in the expansion of needed infrastructure. The agricultural community is committed to working together with the regional master plan that is fair, responsible, and considerate of those affected most by it. Furthermore, the agricultural community urges the council to recognize all the ramifications of this plan before enacting it. Thank you.
I've asked about, I'm going to call on people now in the order that they've come in, but if you have already spoken at one of the previous public hearings at the council, we welcome different comments from you. There's no benefit to you of saying the same thing over again. The council is going to hear your comments, whether you say them once or five times. But we welcome new comments about the draft plan. Matt Sprung.
Thank you very much. I'm here in the capacity of the chairman of the New Jersey Builders Association's Highland Committee. In that capacity, I served on two federal Highlands work groups, one with Congressman Gilman, one with the U.S. Forest Service in 2002, in addition to numerous other groups, including one I sat with Council President Letson and the Morris County for the Morris Tomorrow Group. The Highlands Council is both a water protection and a planning council. The Dragon Highlands Regional Master Plan makes clear that this council has ignored its planning function. The Highlands Council is limited to focus of the RMP to be a water conservation document. Under the terms of the RMP, water availability in the future will be as it currently exists, based on existing supply and transmission systems. All assumptions are extremely conservative. The Highlands region is not running out of water. However, the water resource is not well managed. We only collect and store a small amount of rainwater that falls on the Highlands. Incredibly, the Highlands Council's assumption is that once water is used once, it is gone. That is contrary to water policy throughout the United States. Had our predecessors planned the same thing, none of us would be living in New Jersey today. Instead, they planned for the future needs of water. The Highlands Council should similarly plan for future water needs while protecting the environment. No doubt this plan will stifle the Highlands planning area. The planned community zone, PCV, is very limited in area, almost fully developed. When you take all the policies of the draft RMP into account, there is virtually no land available for development. Even redevelopment of the plan's policy seems unlikely. The Highlands Council is irresponsible in approving the draft RMP without having mapped out the cumulative limiting effect of its numerous policies. Unfortunately, we cannot create a map because the Highlands Council has thus far refused to release the base mapping data needed to visually demonstrate the effects of the draft RMP policies. Comprehensive mapping would have clearly shown that the draft RMP is not compliant with all the goals of the Highlands Act. Not only does the draft RMP fail to address all the goals and mandates of the Highlands Act, but it also presents the wrong vision for the region and its future. The council has failed to recognize the Highlands region is not some remote and accessible area that consults over 800,000 people. The Highlands is an integral part of New Jersey with major interstate highways, railroad connections, employment centers, and over 300,000 homes. As the state population continues to grow, the Highlands Council should strive to ensure that the region continues to be desirable. The region should not be simply the place where talented people will work, but should also be where they invest in homes and support local economies. The plan should strive to help the region realize its full economic potential rather than serving as a deterrent to growth and prosperity. The Highlands Council should not adopt any plan until substantial changes are made to develop a regional plan that provides every conceivable opportunity for appropriate economic growth and development to advance the quality of life of the residents of the region and the entire state. The New Jersey Builders Association believes that it is possible for the Regional Highland Master Plan to be a true regional plan that concurrently protects the natural resources and provides future areas for economic growth and meeting housing for low income levels. I just want to leave you with this. Our environment is in a constant state of change. It's a natural occurring event. Just look at the heavy eroded area out west called the Grand Canyons. We'll speak with someone about Darwinism. Just yesterday, I went on the USGS website and I took a look at the groundwater levels, which you could easily access. Are you aware that groundwater levels in the Highlands are actually on a rise right now? I would encourage you to take a look at that and try to understand what's going on out there before you take any action. Thank you.
Thank you. So, my turn, followed by Reverend Douglas Paxton. Reverend Douglas Paxton.
Yes, I thank you for the opportunity to speak a second time to the council regarding the Highlands Act, although I wear a different hat this time than I did the previous time when I represented the church which I pastor. I stand before you today as the president of the New Jersey Council for American Climate Education, which represents approximately 220,000 students that attend non-public schools in the state of New Jersey and their parents for a total constituency that approaches about 750,000 people. While we share the objective of preserving our waters and lands to serve the public, we have some deep concerns about how the Highlands Act and DRMP will affect our schools and families. Here are some of our concerns. The act will likely result in increasing property taxes on declining property values to sustain municipal and public school budgets. The economic impact on non-public school families will make it more difficult for them to afford to educate their children in the schools of their choice, and will result in more children in the Highlands area attending public schools. This will increase the strain on school systems and the taxpayer, and increase the strain on the natural resources those schools use. New Jersey non-public school students already save New Jersey taxpayers almost $2.4 billion annually in not having to foot the bill for their children's education. Secondly, the language of Exemption 6, which I spoke to before, also affects schools. Before, I spoke previously about houses of worship or places of worship. Exemption 6 applies to places of worship, schools, and hospitals, but presently it's being interpreted in a very narrow manner by limiting the exclusion to only those situations in which those organizations already possess an improvement on their land which existed prior to the date of the effect of the Act. This creates many difficulties. It would limit the ability of those facilities or organizations to improve a parcel of land which they own prior to enactment if it is not contiguous to their present property and presently used for their operations. Consequently, a parcel of land they own across the street from their property and need for their operations now may not be able to be used, or perhaps a field contiguous to their property but not previously used for their mission might not be developed either when needed. It also prevents any organization, religious, educational, or hospital, from moving into an area previously unserved by them, but in need of the services that they provide to the public. Spiritual, educational, and medical needs will go unmet, or those in need of them will have to travel through protected areas to reach those services if they can at all. This increases traffic and pollution in the areas intended to be protected by the Act. It may also result in vehicles having to travel on suitable roadways which may not be able to be improved as a result of this Act, and may create safety hazards for children on school buses. This limits the these things too limit the establishment of schools with a religious mission. And we've already talked in my previous testimony about the violations of both the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment. You also talked too about the limitations that these provide or cause are indeed a substantial burden upon religious organizations which operate schools without a demonstration of a compelling interest or the application of least restrictive means of addressing those interests. I think more attention and thought and opportunity needs to be given to this issue of what are the least restrictive means of reducing the impact development might have upon water supplies or upon pollution. Just some amatory, admittedly, ideas that might be in this category. It might be wiser and cheaper in the long run to provide every person in the Highlands area, if not the entire state of New Jersey, with something as simple as a washing machine that uses 15 gallons of water per load instead of 45, rather than confiscating land use rights. It makes more sense, perhaps, to develop permeable road services or parking lot services that would absorb and slowly release water to the water table than barring roads or parking areas entirely. It would make better public policy and be least restrictive to require rainwater collection systems that would retain water to be used for watering lawns, crops, or other purposes for which no pre-use or post-use water treatment would be necessary. Strangely, it appears that in our efforts to conserve our environment, the actual practical issues of conservation have not been given adequate consideration. Additionally, there are some mechanical problems with the implementation as presented. There appears to be no mechanism by which religious organizations operating schools could be compensated for their lost property values. And as well as been mentioned several times, make it difficult for those organizations to use these lands as collateral for loans. The lines drawn on a land use capability map seem at points to be arbitrary and unrelated to present and long-standing uses of property. In the case of lands owned by one of our sponsoring religious organizations, their land has been classified as agriculturally conserved, even though a large portion of that land has for many years not been used for agriculture. Furthermore, in that property, adjacent to it are small housing lots, less than a quarter of acre in size, already developed and lived in, that are divided so that the homeowner sleeps in his bedroom in the planned community zone, but when he uses the bathroom at the other end of his bedroom, he's in the conservation zone. That seems to be unreasonable and perhaps arbitrary and capricious. There needs to be a mechanism whereby such issues could be corrected and classifications appealed. NJK and our constituency want to see our environment used in ways that serve all the public, or part of the public, a substantial and numerous part. And we're willing to talk with the council, the DEP, and legislature to arrive at ways that we can assist your objectives without damaging our own. We both represent the public. We cannot do your job. You cannot do ours. But together we can serve the public good to which we are accountable. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is David Pfeiffer. I'm project director with the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. The association has been a long advocate of regional planning, and we continue to be so in this case. And we've had a great time in reviewing your draft RMP, and we'll continue to submit written comments probably until March 1st. But I do want to bring some information back to you based on the fact that ANJEC works closely with municipalities in order to facilitate better environmental protection, specifically with environmental commissions throughout the region. We've been meeting with towns, representatives from towns, and talking to elected and appointed officials. And I would like to urge you to take a good hard look at the plan and try to tease out of it some clear, measurable, accessible standards that municipalities can lean to. They're in there, but they're hard to find and they're hard to see. And we should give you great credit for example, the water section. There's some good stuff there. But we're finding that municipalities are coming back with comments like, we can't get our arms around the plan. have. So take a look at the state development guide plan, where you can see statewide policies, planning area policies, very succinctly and clearly expressed. That would be one possible model that you could use. Some other things that we could bring back to you from our experience out in the field, there's a constant confusion about what opting in means. This needs to be clearly expressed. The general tendency is to think that opting in means extending the preservation area controls to the entire municipality, and that's already causing problems. So opting in needs to be more carefully explained. More importantly, though, every municipality that we've dealt with has come back with expressed confusion about how your plan relates to the state development and redevelopment plan, and particularly the endorsement process, and how your plan relates to the council on affordable housing. Your final plan has got to include, in our view, a very careful presentation, perhaps signed off by those other two entities, about how these three state efforts work together. The final thing that we come back to you with is just make it clearer. Often what we see in the plan is a lot of hard work and technical report leading to somewhat timid conclusions. There's an attempt to go somewhere else, but we don't quite see it. An example is the wellhead protection section, which basically simply relies or recapitulates the state program. There are reasons to think that the Highlands resources are different in nature, character, and importance, and that those resources ought to have some special treatment because they are indeed Highlands resources. Cultural resources is another area that seems to rely almost entirely on the state and national registers of historic places, and perhaps local ordinance. There are lots of bold new initiatives that you could take based on the facts that you've already outlined. For example, with historic district protection, you might want to include something in your TDR plan that allows historic districts to be sending zones, like the town of Fanwood has done. Finally, I just want to convey to you the kind of commitment that ANJEC would like to make toward the implementation process and helping towns conform voluntarily in the planning area. We have got some electronic newsletters, the Highlands Herald, which goes out to municipalities in the Highlands region, Highlands Alerts, which are electronic communications to municipalities about specific issues, emergent issues in the Highlands process. We're advising the towns in the Highlands to form right now, to form Highlands work groups that will be composed of members of the Planning Board, the Environmental Commission, and whoever else they might choose, to begin to understand the plan and prepare for the conformance process. Some towns have already done that. Some towns have actually engaged their planners. One of the things that is troubling a lot of them is the map. I mean, you've heard comments. I like the one about the line being through the house. Municipalities are going to want to see the data that is used to generate those maps in electronic format, not just PDFs over the web. And they're going to need those to be intelligent about giving up the letter of intent that you're going to require. So they're going to want to look at where they are in relation to you now themselves. So please find a way to get those data out to them. Some other things that we are planning to do, we're looking for three candidate municipalities to work with closely during the conformance process, one in the preservation area, one in an area that's mixed between planning and preservation, and one that's in either one but substantially developed. that's the idea there, is simply to transfer positive experiences to other municipalities that maybe are considered conforming. We also have a grant program that's available to municipalities for planning enhancement. They can apply for and receive up to $20,000 in matching grant money for specific improvements to their plans that probably would be required by a Highlands process. The grant process was designed to help the state planning process. That's what I have to say to you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Clerk Tavella, followed by Heather Grayson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Highlands Council members. My name is Doug Tavella. I'm a consulting forester approved for practice in New Jersey by the State Forest Service and a member of my national professional organization, the Society of American Foresters. I've been assisting private woodland owners in northwestern New Jersey with the management of their lands for the past 22 years. And for the past 2+ years, I've been helping to provide input from the forest management community with regard to the Highlands Region planning process. Most recently, I've served as a member of the Sustainable Forestry Technical Advisory Committee. Prior to last year's charrette, a 34-page summary report on sustainable forest management was presented to the full membership of this TAC. This is a well-documented, well-cited document that's based on scientific knowledge and field-tested experience that's been gained over decades of research and field trial. This document immediately had the support of 9 of the 13 TAC members, and all members of the TAC were asked to comment on the report's content. No comments were received from any TAC members who initially withheld their support. This being said, though, professionals from various disciplines worked together at this charrette to tacitly agree upon a resource management philosophy in the Highlands region that was practical and which made scientific sense. I'm alarmed to see that the recommendations contained in the draft ecosystem management technical report to the RMP bear practically no resemblance to the important topics which were discussed and agreed upon at this charrette. In this draft technical report, the strength of the current regulatory framework under which forestry on private lands is practiced in the region and the qualification requirements of private lands practitioners are brought into question. The report charges the council with developing an oversight program that must be administered by a woefully undermanned state forest service, and in effect, challenges the quality of the educations provided by the 4-year institutions that have been granting forestry degrees in this country for the past 80+ years. My concerns, however, go beyond these two important points. The Sustainable Forestry Report, alluded to earlier, addresses such critical topics as the importance of forest management in increasing water yield and protecting water quality, maintaining a mosaic of forest age classes on the landscape, which in turn provides habitat for the widest possible range of plant and animal species. Restoration of forest understory, deer management, implementation of existing national woodland certification programs, and standardization of tree cutting ordinances and conservation easements. These critical issues were almost completely ignored in the current ecosystem management report. The inaccurate statements that are contained in the report are not only unsettling, but are offensive to me as a forest professional. Time restraints limit the opportunity to address more specific issues at this time, including the objectionable passages in the report pertaining to proposed changes in the Farmland Assessment Act and council oversight of all forest management activity within the region. Representatives of the New Jersey Division of the Society of American Foresters will submit specific written comments to the council in the coming weeks. In closing, I wish to express that in my view, to use the Ecosystem Management Technical Report in its current form as a basis for development of forest resource management policy in a region that is of such great importance to so many people would be to ignore field-tested and peer-reviewed science in deference to questionable political goals. State and private forest land managers in New Jersey have been committed to sustainable forestry through best forest management practices for decades. This commitment has resulted in the improvement of forest structure, health, and composition on many thousands of acres, protection of critical natural sites, and stewardship of the myriad benefits and resources that are provided by forest land. We've worked diligently toward this end, and we deserve your trust. I speak for many concerned foresters and landowners when I ask the council to direct a rewriting of the Ecosystem Management Technical Report so that it stays within the bounds of the authority granted by the legislation and incorporates the contributions made in the Sustainable Forestry Report. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon. I thank you again for allowing me to give my public comments today. My name again is Heather Gracie, and I'm a certified forester through the Society of American Foresters, and I've been practicing forestry in the Highlands region since 1984. I served on your Sustainable Forestry Technical Advisory Committee and co-authored the 34-page report on forestry to the council that was endorsed by 9 out of 13 of my fellow committee members. When I read pages 51 through 54, which were the sections 8.8 through 8.82 of the Ecosystem Management Technical Report, I could find only 5 sentences that I could support. The remainder were either factually inaccurate, misleading, not representative of the current regulatory environment, or were in opposition of the forestry exemption under Section 30A-7 of the Highlands Act. And I'll share with you a couple of my examples, and I'll also submit this today. On page 52, which would be the first paragraph, first sentence, it states that forest management activities conducted on private land under an approved forest management plan are not subject to inspection to verify that the work was completed in accordance with an approved plan. This statement is certainly untrue. The Forest Service inspects every forest under a plan once every 3 to 4 years as required. Each consulting forestry usually visits each property maybe several times a year and sometimes 2 to 3 years. Many municipal assessors or their agents, of which some include foresters, inspect properties regularly. All there for the specific purpose to verify that the work was completed in accordance with the approved plan. Another example is on page 52, first paragraph, second sentence. It states that currently little data is collected to report and maintain for farming assessment programs. This statement again is untrue. In our office, we have 84 door filing cabinets filled with copies of regulatory filings for farming assessment programs. The New Jersey Forest Service office is in Andover, New Lisbon, as well as each municipal assessor has copies of the following for every farming assessment property with non-pertinent woodland. These would include 1, a complete inventory of woodland, 2, ownership information and management history, 3, a complete description of all agricultural activities that occurred on the property, and lastly, a complete description of all agricultural income that has been realized from the property. And this is an annual reporting. Another statement was on page 52, first paragraph, third sentence. Under the current reporting methods, information on the location of forest land is being managed under approved plan, and the volumes of materials removed from the given properties or from the region is very limited. Again, untrue. It is mandated by the farmland assessment law or program that the exact information is to be submitted to the Forest Service and to the municipal assessor annually. The grand total of all forest products removed from the region could be easily calculated by a researcher simply by visiting the New Jersey Forest Service offices in Andover and Lisbon. Throughout the remainder of the report, there are a laundry list of additional regulations, inspections, reporting requirements, plan requirements, and poorly thought through policies that fly in the face of the legislature's mandate as expressed in the clearly written forestry exemption under Section 38A7 of Hiles Act. Most are misleading as they suggest the 1986 Farmland Assessment Act does not exist at all, nor that the state does not have the Forestry and Wetlands Best Management Practices, which was published in 1995, in accordance with the Federal Clean Water Act. One such example is the proposal to change the Farmland Assessment Act found on page 52-54. Among the proposed changes are additional reporting requirements, additional requirements for forest land plans that would add no value to the landowner, gross and anti-competitive requirements for woodcutters, and changes to the qualified income requirement of the law that directly contradict the stated opinion of the Division of Taxation. Despite all this, on page 51, paragraph 8, the income requirement of Farmland Assessment Act is not accurate. It is time now for the council and staff to exercise the will and due diligence to write an accurate ecosystem management technical report and make any related changes in the regional master plans needed. Sections 6.8 through 6.2 of the report are unacceptable in many ways. Responsible foresters have been telling you and your staff for the past 2 years that we are available to assist in the creation of a quality regional master plan. We remain so. Again, I know you have a hard road to hoe. We just appreciate the time that we've been able to share some of our concerns, and not just as foresters, but as stewards that are really committed to the land and working with forest landowners to make these proper decisions for the benefit of all. Thank you very much.
Lois Drysdale, followed by Andrew Drysdale.
My name is Lois Drysdale. My husband Andy and I own 16 and a half acres in the preservation area, which is the remainder of 83 and father's 120-acre dairy farm. The Highlands Act has shattered our retirement. For nearly 2 years, we have attended Highlands Council meetings. At many of these council meetings we have visited, as condescending, arrogant environmentalists told us our land is just an investment and to get over it. When Jesus threw the merchants out of the temple, he called it a den of thieves. A den of thieves have stolen our land and are telling us that they may come into any building in our land or our property without a warrant. If we do not let them, we will be subject to a huge fine. Where is the justice in that? Andy and I attended four of the previous Highlands Council public hearings. We're shocked to find that only a few of the council members present. How he made wise decisions unless you are willing to listen to all of the public comments. My husband is 71 and still working. I will be 70 this spring. Where is the compensation for our land? Are you waiting for us to die? In 1776, George Washington crossed the Delaware and led the attack at the Battle of Trenton. The ragged colonials were fighting to protect their rights and their independence from England. 231 years later, we are again in Trenton, fighting to protect our rights, not from another country, but from our own state government. I think it's about time for George Washington to repeat this march on Trenton. Thank you.
Strict rules will be enforced upon any municipality that opts in.
which will harm people by lowering their property value and taking away some of their constitutional rights. We are told that some of the needed science is on the way. I hope it does not get muddled or distorted. As for the foundation, the Highlands Act and the DEP regulations are a very poor foundation. The Highlands Act is a terrible piece of legislation signed into law for political reasons, using clean water and the environment as an excuse. They knew there was no money available to fully compensate those who were harmed, but went ahead and did it anyway. This act must be abolished. The rules put in place by the DEP following the act are absolutely disgusting and unconstitutional. These rules must also be abolished. Underlying the claim is that, and its faulty foundation, we have the worst problem of all, the corrupt government of the state of New Jersey that has been growing like cancer and is in need of major surgery. You and the voters of New Jersey, please contact your legislator and government officials. If they will not agree to try and overturn this abusive act, please vote them out of office. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Cindy Magongo. I'm a resident of Clarendon County. I'm speaking today as a representative from the Musconetcon Watershed Association. The Musconetcon Watershed Association supports the regional master plan that proposes severe constraints to development in the Highlands to protect our limited water resources. The plan recognizes that environmental quality has everything to do with land use, and in noting that most of the water in the Highlands is in short supply or polluted, rightly asserts that it is the land that needs strong protection. Those areas which have been placed in the planning area should not be more vulnerable to the negative effects of sprawl. The municipalities along the river lack the financial resources and other means to adequately protect the lands, the river, and its tributaries. Strict restrictions on inappropriate growth are essential to prevent further degradation. The planned community zone should not encourage the continuation of poor past land use decisions. Instead, restoration and enhancement of environmentally sensitive areas should be a priority. Forested buffers along waterways and wetlands should be reestablished along these degraded riverfront sites. The 300-foot stream buffer in the preservation area should also be extended throughout the planning area. The plan should define and delineate the water resources that are in here and have no-go zones where they exist. Development pressure in the proposed conservation zone is intensifying, and many areas have been converted from agricultural and natural landscapes to residential and commercial land uses. The effects of increased runoff from roads, roofs, and parking lots are evident in stream bank erosion and stream bed scouring. Opportunities for equitable farmland preservation, conservation easements, and a TDR program need to be adequately funded to ensure the continued existence of these farmlands. Our forests are the best protection for our water supply and quality. The protection zone rightly spans both the preservation and planning areas, and we support the prohibitions on the clearing of forest vegetation. Governor, then Senator Corzine, stated while testifying on behalf of Bill S-1096, which designated portions of the Musconetcon River as a component of the National Wild and Scenic River Systems, that, and I quote, "The Musconetcon River is one of the most scenic areas of northwestern New Jersey. Its once pristine waters face deteriorating water quality due to increased levels of bacteria, silt, and runoff from roadways. This is particularly disturbing since the river feeds aquifers that provide many residents in 100 and more counties with quality drinking water. Unfortunately, while the municipalities that line along the river want to preserve this historic natural resource, they lack the resources to do so, leaving the entire watershed vulnerable to further development and damage," end quote. We are confident that the Highland Act will help to preserve and restore the forests, floodplains, headwaters, and wetlands in the watershed. The outstanding scenic, historic, and recreational qualities of the river are amenities enjoyed by local residents and tourists alike, and as such are important to the local economy. We thank the members of the council and staff for your hard work and look forward to facilitating cooperative efforts across municipal boundaries and property lines to protect and improve the river. Thank you.
Devlin Mackey, followed by David Post.
Good afternoon. Some more points that I want to bring up to you guys. The builders sued and asked for documents to be released. I believe some more reports were released this morning. I haven't had the opportunity to review those. I was wondering if you had any intention of ever releasing the waiting documents, the documents that would take the various reports that you have, and how much importance was given to wildlife, how much importance was given to water around the wildlife protection area and the various points of your plan. I can find nowhere where any of those, where there's any document that gives any particular weight or validity to, you know, or percentage of validity to the various technical reports and stuff that you guys are coming up with. I support a water fee, tax, whatever you guys would want to call it. I don't care what kind of fancy name you put.
Fee.
Okay, we'll call it a fee. As long as it is 100% across the board, unequivocally, constitutionally dedicated to the landowners of the Highlands region, not to the water companies, not to the municipality, not to the county, but to the armed parties involved, period. End of discussion. The devil is always in the details in Trenton, where we are now. And on that same note, we're going to state the CUSP program. I noticed that Jeff Tittle, Mr. Pringle, and some others are lobbying to see this thing refunded. I don't know if you folks are aware of the fact that part of their salaries are derived from every time one of these tax-exempt organizations put out, they go out and they get a tax, or they get money from the state, federal government, and other various tax-paying entities. They get a portion of every fee. You know, if they close on a property at $100,000 an acre, at 100 acres, they get a percent of that, goes to pay their administrative staff to put that deal together. Farm Bureau doesn't get a percent of anything. That's how the farming community has been working. We work for the good of it all, not for a cut. While I support the Garden State Trust program and more funding for it, I do not support current funding mechanisms that the SADC has currently on the table. They're changing the structure of how many dollars are going to be spent for a particular piece of property, and then how much they're within the works of that is a limitation on how much the value of that property is going to be allowed to be worth, how big a house is going to be put on it. The Highlands Council needs to become a little bit of a part of what's going on at the SADC level if you're going to use the GSPT funds to fund it. What I don't want you to have the misconception that these are funding my loss of equity by stripping me of my constitutional rights to one degree on what is they're doing in yourself, and then balancing that by saying, well, you're getting paid, so therefore it's not really a taking, and allowing the SADC to take more of my rights away from me and not compensate me for it. It's supposed to be compensating me for my development rights, period. not development rights and a whole laundry list of other items. Also on that note, TDR. I'm assuming, I don't know if the council itself has looked at this, but obviously Tom Gordon and some of the other attorneys that you guys have on staff. You look at Penn Central, which is where this TDRs came from, which is another component of where you're trying to compensate it. In the Penn Central case, if you look and read through that, Penn Central, the Supreme Court ruled that we're going to take your development rights off of this piece of property. You can use it on this other one. Penn Central had another place that was a liquid asset that they could take the development rights from here, they could put them over there, they could turn it into cash just as easily in one place as they could in the other. I see nothing within your TDR program that you have as currently written in your plan that allows us to do that. It is, in my reading through all the documents of your TDR program, you've got an upside down pyramid that's balanced there. You have the builders not being a part of it, you have the landowners not being a part of it. It can and will not work. If you're gonna actually believe in any sense that you're taking care of our equity problem, you gotta balance this by what is right and fair to us. Don't look at this and say, well, you know, we're gonna give them 15 cents on a dollar, therefore we avoid constitutional taking. All's well in the world. Make it fair and equitable to us.
My name is Deborah Post. Well, not Deborah.
It's a hard year to the city post, Chester, New Jersey, and someone signed in.
I own and operate a farm in Chester Township. I have provided this council with constructive comments over the past 2 years throughout the plan development process, as have many of my landowner colleagues. We have attended council meetings, we have spoken, we have communicated concerns, problems, and needs, and you haven't heard a word we said. This week's paper reports a council member whining that these hearings are, heaven forbid, just like the council meetings, where he was required to sit through the dissent, anger, pleas, and cries of those who have had their lives shattered by this act. You don't even want to pretend to listen, do you? Others have met with the council privately in purportedly informal and more cooperative forums, but you didn't heed them either. The thoughts of the public, and specifically of Highlanders, is just an inconvenient waste of your time. You are going through the motions of these hearings only because the law so mandates, as is completely evidenced by your attendance today. The plan reflects that you haven't heard or heeded any comments provided to you. The plan reflects a complete disdain for landowner needs and concerns. The council has not listened to the Highlands landowners. Mirroring this deafness, the council staff has not listened to council direction. Or is it that the council members fail to give any direction? The plan is an extremist document prepared by a staff of environmental extremists. The staff has not been held accountable to any management, to any political process, even to the Highlands Act itself. The staff has produced a plan that ignores the directives of the Act, that ignores the legislative intent, that ignores the promises made to officials and organizations representing the Highlands, and that ignores the voices of the people. The plan is not a thoughtful, smart growth document based on science and human needs, but rather an environmental regulatory wish list of those who find the wood turtle more worthy than the Homo sapiens who have to date been good stewards of the land. The plan is an environmental manifesto to be enforced by an environmental SS. I hold you, the council members, responsible for the failure and atrocity of this plan. It is, however, not too late to rectify your errors. This time, do not be influenced by those late-night flattering calls from the governor's office. Vote your conscience, not your social prestige this time. Do not approve this plan. Vote no.
Thank you. And thank you for your patience. I know you've been through a lot of meetings over the last year, and I commend all of you for sitting through all this. You have more patience than I have.
You've been emotional.
Yeah, I know. I still have more patience than I have, so I can go out and outside. I wanted to start off with just one point of clarification. As director of the Sierra Club, Sierra Club is barred in our bylaws from taking any governmental money. So the person who said that it was specious and false, like a lot of the other things that we keep hearing in these hearings, because this is supposed to be about a master plan and about protecting resources. So I just want to start off and say that that's just totally wrong. Sierra Club takes no governmental money whatsoever. We're an advocacy group, and that's how we were set up over 113 years ago. I just wanted to start off and say, as someone who is lucky and privileged to live both in Lambertville and Ringwood, I see both sides of the Highlands, an area just below. I've also had the privilege of seeing the Wanakee Reservoir my entire life. But I've also seen it at times when you look across it and you think you see Lawrence of Arabia because there's no water and it looks like it goes on forever with just sand. And I've also just got a letter in the mail yesterday in Lambertville that says that our reservoir has accelerated levels of trihalomethane above safe drinking water standard. And the reason is that trihalomethane is when you disinfect or kill bacteria with chlorine, you get a die-off, which is carcinogenic. The point that I'm making is because we haven't protected reservoirs like the reservoir in Lambertville, which upstream development and farm runoff has added to this problem, we have a choice in either building a new treatment plant or getting cancer. And that's really what the Highlands Act and the Highlands Plan is about. You know, we're going through these meetings, and we need to all step back and take the overview, the global view of the Highlands Plan. It's about protecting that water resource and protecting the economy of the state. And one of the things that I'd like to see strengthened in the plan is the economic section, to really look at the industry and the economy and the cost of treatment and the cost of lost resources to the people of New Jersey. Because I think we need to look at that as a way of adding value and going to the legislature and the governor, not just for a water tax and other things, and not just for open space, but to help you implement this plan. Because a plan without implementation is just a book on a shelf. And the reason I'm saying that is because we need to get towns to opt in, we need to get towns to do good planning. It's not going to happen just by giving us some planning grants. It's going to happen because there's going to be state resources to protect the overall public good, which is our water supply. And that not only money for planning, but money for economic development that's appropriate, like maybe eco and historic tourism and other things that need to be integrated into this plan. I just think that the plan is a good start in a lot of ways. There are problems with it. I'm very pleased to see that the water data has come out. So we now have a big piece that we need to go through and figure out what it all means, but at least it's now there. And I have to commend you for doing that. But I just want to leave you with a couple of issues. You really need to think not only broader and big picture and to try to get leadership out of the governor and the state legislature, but you also need to make sure that your work doesn't get undermined by what's happening just down the street, where the State Planning Commission is attempting to undermine this plan before it's actually adopted with the Sussex County Cross Acceptance. And I think that's an outrage because your work has to be done before. And the other point is that other agencies need to be looking at this plan as a basis for their plans, whether it's DOT and DEP, because you should be primacy in the Highlands with the state and governor backing you up, not undermining you. And my last and final point is that currently water
is the fuel that drives the state economic engine. But until you make the hard choices on how much development will take place in the Highlands, where that growth is going to go, and what's the capacity, you have a car without an engine or a transmission. And you need to stand up, even if it means taking your lumps, because you've taken plenty already. I know I've been at enough meetings. But to do what's right, and to do what's right for the people of New Jersey, which is to come up with a comprehensive plan that has clear objectives and goals, clear standards, and a clear way to implement the plan and to get people to buy in. Thank you very much.
My name is Bob Fink. I'm from Washington Township in Warren County. I'd like to thank Mr. Thibault for pointing out that we do have options such as purification of water. Just the option that we're using right now is to restrict the rights of the landowners. At the Voorhees meeting, I made a request that the council donate money to the legal fund of the Highlands Conservation Association. The ACA is working to bring a federal lawsuit that will resolve the issue of whether or not this is truly the crime that we believe it is. Just curious if you're going to take that seriously. Or...
We're going to answer questions.
Okay.
We have not decided to do that so far.
At a prior meeting, I made a comparison between the Highlands Act and Laban's Run. My comparison was brushed off as crazy, and therefore I'd like to elaborate on my comparison. In the 1930s and 40s, Germany instituted a plan to acquire living space. They called it Lebensraum. Lebensraum was a crime where Germany looked east and stole the land of Poland and the Soviet Union. 20 million Russians died in the process. The Highlands Act is a crime where New Jersey and eastern counties look northwest and stole the land of Highland farmers in northwest Jersey. Lebensraum put into place unelected administrators to rule the conquered territory. The Highlands Act gave the DEP complete authority to administer the Highlands Preservation Area. And the governor appointed the Highlands Council to administer the planning area. They are unelected. The criminals that perpetrated Lebensraum believed in their cause, more living space for the German people. The people of the occupied territory were considered subhuman. The supporters of the Highlands Act believe in their causes. They want to save the water. But as Mr. Tittle pointed out, there are other ways to do this. It's just cheaper to steal my land and the land of other farmers. Desalinization and reverse osmosis or other type of purification would provide all the water we need. We're right on New Jersey borders an unlimited supply of water, the Atlantic Ocean. It would be expensive, but we're making a choice of taking my rights instead. The supporters also want to protect wildlife, different plants and animals. They want to create a giant nature preserve by stealing land from the farmers. This treats us as subhuman. Our rights are put behind those of turtles and ferns. Why does I understand these environmental regulations, but why does non-Highlands wildlife deserve less protection than wildlife in the Highlands? If it's so important to preserve an endangered species or protect habitat, why is it restricted to a minority area? Why aren't these laws good enough for the entire state? My opinion is that you can never get by applying these laws to the majority, but you've created such a small minority that you can get your way there. Also, if you want to build a park, as some people have pointed out, for kayaking or a giant nature preserve, just be honest and buy my land. Also, since towns are given the opportunity to opt in, why can't I opt out? In the least, if you really need my land, and I can't opt out, then condemn and pay me for it. Otherwise, just leave me alone. When people in Russia objected to their new rulers, they were hauled off in trucks into the woods and executed, or sent to be slaves in work camps, or relocated into ghettos. When the people in the Highlands objected to the new rules, they were first allowed to speak at council meetings. Then we were silenced. I applaud you for not following the footsteps of your predecessors in executing the farmers. However, you have in fact tortured and enslaved the farmers. They are now unable to save their farms and must continue to work under increasingly repressive regulations. And just like the ghettos created by the Germans, you have a new label for them, calling them town centers. No matter how subhuman you believe the Highlands farmers are, they are not stupid. When you made this latest attempt at Lady's Run, you considered, how can we get away with it this time? So, with your new plan, you thought, maybe we can fool those dumb farmers. We'll tell them they still own it, but we won't allow them to do anything with it. We'll enslave them on our own land. If we leave their name on the deed, we can even get them to continue to pay taxes. Please don't treat us as an infestation. Believe it or not, we are humans. We are Americans. The people that voted for this act expected us to be compensated. It is your responsibility to ensure that we are compensated and treated fairly. Thank you for your time.
My name is Richard Longo. My wife and I live in and own property in Boot Township of Morris County. We're in the preservation area. It's my opinion that this bill was ran through the legislature at the speed of light. It was orchestrated by Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Snow White being Governor Grady, and the Seven Dwarfs being the legislators who co-sponsored and sponsored this act. It's a fairy tale. I've attended numerous meetings of the Highlands Council and public hearings on this matter. I've never once heard anyone opposing the act say that they were against preservation if preservation was needed. People on both sides have spoken about the science that will substantiate the law for this law. The council and the staff have not revealed any. I've heard many people speak about preserving the land with the excuses about the water. It seems like someone wants to take the man on the pretense of preservation to stop others from building and living where they have their roots. My county alone, Morris County, has preserved thousands of acres through acquisition. That's parks, farms, municipal land for parks, thousands of acres. After the land has been preserved for open space, much of it is not taken care of and is rarely utilized by the majority of the people of the state. As to my situation, my two grandchildren would have been the 10th generation in our family to continuously live on our land, one house on 4 acres for each child. Because of the unconstitutionality of this law, this is being prevented. Again, it's not about the water, it's about politics. And politics are a fact in my township. And likely, probably a fact in quite a few of the towns of Highlands area. If the Highlands Council can't see this, you're missing something. You should start from square one and reject the regional master plan and tell the governor and the legislature it's a political scam and unconstitutional because the money to reimburse the stakeholders that have been harmed because their cherished land has been devalued to almost nothing. Again, my wife and I never wanted to sell our land. We could have, but we did not. We wanted to continue our family legacy to our old wayside farm land for our grandchildren, and we can't do this. Thank you.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. I want to thank you again for the leadership that you have shown on calling for a renewal of the Martin State Preservation Trust. But I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap it up. I'm not sure that letters from the council are going to be enough. Maybe we need a bus to take everybody down to do council lobbying, or maybe we should all join the people who are going to be lobbying in Trenton next week. But I think some face-to-face, particularly with the governor and with local area legislators in Trenton, is going to be essential to help impress upon them how important this is for the success of the Highlands RMP. I think the same is going to be necessary, even more so, as far as a water user fee is concerned. However, I think when you're thinking about water user fees, I think please consider that any town that is a recipient of said fees for open space preservation should only be a recipient if they have opted in to the RMP. Public financing has always played a huge role in regional planning, and we believe that the state is MIA right now on supporting the work that you are doing. This is not the time to be timid. You have done a huge amount of work. You have put together a tremendous amount of data. You really have all the data that you need to reach the hard decisions. And we believe that there are some hard decisions to be made. But the plan must now go forward and incorporate measurable objectives with milestones that can be used to develop the standards and ordinances that you are going to be proposing in and before conformance. So that has to happen, we believe, first. There was some testimony earlier in connection with TDRs and the value of development credits, particularly in the Highlands. And I wanted to point out to you that the value of a Highlands development credit, when it was first issued, which included four rights in the bundle, was $10,000 or $2,500 per right. That was the fact that there wasn't a lot of market for those at that time was very much driven by the fact that there wasn't much of a market before the Highlands Act was passed. And the casinos had not yet been built, and the Philadelphia area market was in recession. Today, each of those bundles of rights is worth $120,000. I think that's a pretty substantial increase in value, and is an indication of what TDRs and development credits can do for those who hold them. We do think this is a strong beginning, that the data you have collected allows you to make the tough decisions, that it serves as a base, but that you should not think of the Act and the RMP as exactly word for word what you must do. It's a base, it's a minimum. You have the right under the Act, and I know you have discussed this, you have the right under the Act to go beyond what is in the Act, but to use that as a minimum. Again, please, I think you have heard repeatedly the issue of GSPT renewal, water user fees, and other tools such as TDRs is going to be critical to this program, and we really need you to step up on this issue now. Thank you.
Susan Buck, followed by David Pringle.
I wish I could say it was nice to be back in Trenton on almost the third anniversary of the advance for the Highlands Act itself. Back 3 years ago, a lot of us, busloads of us, came and provided our feelings that there was a major concern with passing a bill like that without the funding. In terms of doing regional plan without local expertise, we thought there was a risk for that as well. And especially within the time period that was allotted. We were concerned we were going to create another bureaucracy. We were concerned that property values were going to decrease dramatically. All those warnings that we had back then are now, as we all know, fact. And it's a matter of, at this point, how do we get out from under this? I was hoping the regional master plan was going to address some of these issues. I found that it just hasn't. there's come up with, I'll provide written comments, but there's like 13 things in the Highlands Act itself that we thought were going to help us through that. Certainly the funding was one of the issues, and all of the development, I mean the identification of all the resources and what the build-out was going to be, what the financial impact was going to be. We thought once we have that all together, there might be some rational way to go forward and pick up the pieces of our basically broken lives that occurred 3 years ago. Unfortunately, there's a lot of things that are not done. The document itself is not a plan. Many people said the same thing. It's really a regulatory paper and a lot of good, interesting historical information, but nothing that helps us plan for the future. Almost nothing. And going back to rereading the Highlands Act, you know, I had little 13 things that should have been done, but the number one thing I think that was a violation of the Highlands Act itself was that in Section 4, it specifically states that the Highlands Council shall be independent of the DEP. Independent. And it makes sense because the Highlands Council is a planning body, not a regulatory body. It's supposed to be a planning body. But when staffing situations came along and things started falling behind, what happened? The DEP provided personnel, so the Highlands Council to complete the plan. I compare what was in the scoping document, and I find one building box after another there. The scoping document, you know, we had some issues with it, but basically it was similar with the Highlands Act, and certain things were going to happen. Like that almost told me I was waiting. That's the number one thing that's missing. The council was supposed to look at the science, develop weighting factors for each one of these things, and then come up with the maps that would show which thing was more important to another. You know, is the turtle more important than tourism? Is the water more important than the environment? You know, all of that was supposed to have factors. Instead of having one big blanket and the map, even if you're lucky enough to be in a brown or purple area, when you read the site-specific things, there's not much that can be done anywhere whatsoever. So I'm concerned that there was no separation between planning and regulation. There's too much of an influence of the DEP. Somehow, the council ended up taking the entire summer off and not having the meetings that we were promised where all of this was going to get hashed out. Not that it's easy, but it has to be done. And it wasn't done yet, and now it has to be done now. I talked to local municipal officials. They can't review the plan. They can't make sense, and neither can I. I spent hours and hours and hours. If you go from the technical information that is provided, and you can't follow it through to, okay, what turns out to be the most important? What are the actual conclusions? The conclusions are vague. Executive summaries in these papers is one paragraph or a 250-page document. And maybe it's my old financial analysis department for a big corporation. I've got a corporate mentality. But in an executive summary, you have what the assumptions are, what the sensitivity and the risks are, and certainly what the conclusions are. And it just doesn't exist. It's a very difficult document to read. It seems to have been written by a regulatory body, not a planning body. It just doesn't have that planning flavor of, you know, this is what our problem is, identify the problem, this is what our assumptions are about how we're going to fix it, and this is what our conclusion is. And then later on, you get into the details of what those assumptions were and how valid they are, what the other opinions are. It's impossible to follow. And you look at it, people are tempted to look at the map because they can't read thousands of pages, and they're coming up with the wrong conclusion based on the color on the map because the verbiage isn't clear anywhere how it got to be that way. And the very specifics of it. I think we do have to come out with very, very specific things. The missing municipal ordinances at this stage, I think, is a dangerous thing. Towns need to know what they're getting into. The missing agreements for the other state agencies, the Department of Agriculture, the DEP, COLA, all of them, they need to be there. The local people are starting to get in a panic. They're kind of a state of chaos. What do we do? What are the rules going to be? Homeowners are applying for things and they're being sent here, there, and everywhere 6 months before they even have a decent answer about what the approval process is supposed to be. So I think this, it's okay to now put those things in there so we know where we stand. Thanks.
Thank you. David Pringle, followed by Hank Plum.
Hi, David Pringle, I'm the campaign director for the New Jersey Environmental Federation. My printer was down, so this is my notebook today. I testified at the Morristown evening hearing, so I was going to make some supplemental comments to that. My organization represents 100,000 individual members and an additional 100 member groups, all of which benefit financially from the Highlands, most of which recreate in the Highlands, and the vast majority of which consume Highlands drinking water as their primary source of drinking water. And those folks are concerned about whether there's going to be enough water in the Highlands, whether it's going to be safe, and at what cost. We need this plan to be much clearer, much stronger than it currently is, to ensure that millions of New Jersey citizens, especially those in northern urban areas of the state, do not face significantly increased, unfair, and unnecessary health and financial risk. I testified about the Passaic River at times being 100% treated sewage. That leads to additional pollution at the treatment plants, additional fish kills, additional treatment costs. The North Jersey Water Supply Commission estimated that without strong Highlands protections, it's going to cost an additional $100 billion over the next 50 years to protect treat our drinking water. And that's just the financial cost. That treatment isn't 100% effective. No treatment, even when it's working perfectly, reduces all the health risks associated with that pollution. And no treatment, even when no treatment ever works, not only does it not remove 100% when working perfectly, no treatment system ever works perfectly. With those additional treatment costs, the most common is a variety of disinfectants associated with chlorine, bromine, and other halogens that have, a public health wonder instead of around getting rid of dysentery and cholera, they create disinfectant byproducts that are increasingly linked to miscarriages, birth defects, and cancer.
Could you keep your comments on the direct plan?
I am keeping them on the plan. This is about protecting our water, and this is why we need to protect our water. Dr. Bovee from the CDC has done seminal work making the links between disinfectant byproducts and increased pollution in the source water, and he used New Jersey case studies to make these links. Specific comments on the plan: we're particularly pleased with the 300-foot buffers on the riparian buffers, the 1,000-foot vernal pond buffers, and the prohibitions on the modifying of threatened endangered species habitat. We're also pleased the plan does recognize that there is too little water in the Highlands and too much of that water is polluted. While it does a great job of recognizing those problems, it doesn't do a great job of fixing those problems. And it really needs to spell out the details of how we're going to deal with those water supply deficits and the pollution with strong standards as the plan moves forward. It also doesn't address, once we conclude how much water there is, how much of that water is going to stay in the Highlands versus be reserved for growth outside the Highlands. How much of it is going to be strategic permitting? How much of that water is going to be reserved for redevelopment and new schools that are needed in the community development zones as opposed to new golf courses out in the hinterlands? My final point I would like to make is, you know, we've heard a lot from how this is going to hurt affordable housing. But the folks making that argument are the developers. They're the ones that profit from building. They're not providing affordable housing. So I urge you to reject all of their arguments when it comes to these guys wanting to build affordable housing, because they're not doing it. If you want to hear about affordable housing, listen to Paul Christie from the Coalition for Affordable Housing and the Environment here earlier today. I also noted that the real affordable housing advocates like Paul, like Fair Share, like the Housing Community Development Network of New Jersey, are not saying this plan is going to hurt affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you. The other speakers I have signed up in order are Michael Mattali, Eric Stiles, Doug Williams, Tony DiLodovico, Marion Harris, Fred Turner, and Mike Hurston. So if you want to speak, you're not on that list. I guess go to the table in the front, then
both sides. Fantastic. That sign works both ways. Listen, thank you for letting me speak. My name is Hank Klopp. I'm a farmer and hunter. I have 150 acres in the Highlands Reservation. 6 state mandated hearings on the Highlands Act regional mandate when they're required. Why isn't every council member required to attend every hearing to listen to the concerns of the people? Isn't attending part of the job requirement? It should be. Should everyone that will be voting on this finalization of this plan be required to listen to me, even if they have heard my same concern for years now? The members of this council are the people I have stood before asking to please protect private property rights. So far, I don't see any help in sight. Many of you have told me after the meeting that you understand what is happening to me and my land, but then a master plan comes out, leaving me same unjust positions as it was the day McGreevy signed this Highlands Act. Guess I'm foolish, had faith in all of you to do the right thing, scrap this act until it is complete and money is in place to compensate landowners and make the act fair. No one was supposed to be hurt by this act. Newspapers are saying there is such a small turnout to oppose the Highlands Act, and so the opponents now understand and accept it. But they are wrong. Guess they are just smarter than me. They aren't wasting their time standing before deaf ears, as I have from day one. I've attended more council meetings than many council members. I've always believed, regardless of what others have told me, that this council would do the right thing. Here we are now, right down to the wire, and the future of my farm, my family farm, doesn't look good. I'm being asked to make major financial sacrifices. We have reached the point that I will possibly have to hire a farmhand with a law degree to interpret the unrealistic property restrictions. Environmentalists are being very quick to tell me what should be done with my properties. These people are not matching me dollar for dollar in what I am being asked to give up for this act. The beautiful property that the environmentalists show in their aerial view is privately owned property, and many of these acres are mine. The Highlands Act gives many of us no choice but to challenge the injustice. I have one other question too. I was fortunate to be on an agriculture charrette, and after the thing came out, I was disappointed. I feel that maybe I was at a different charrette than everybody else that was there, because what came out of the agriculture isn't what's in the plan. So, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I'm going to tell you to be followed by Eric Stein.
I thought I was going to say good morning, but I guess it has to turn out to be good afternoon. But that's okay. I'll wait for my turn. I am Michael Natale and a custom home builder from Parsippany, New Jersey. I don't need to go through the whole spiel as to what I talked about at the previous meetings because of one, it's never been heard. It's been publicized in the newspapers. And many other people make the same valid points. Instead, I'm going to go to a slightly different direction. There are many things I would like to say again, but I'm going to curb them. Instead, this time around, I'm going to do a dedication for my mother.
I would like to speak on behalf of my little mother, Maria Natalie. We own a family-owned business that builds new homes. My father, who's the head of our business, purchased 112 acres of land on August 4th, 2003, with the entire life savings and loans from the bank, without any knowledge of where the Highlands Act was going to directly affect, since we did not have any inside scoop. 1 week later, on August 11, 2003, my father unexpectedly passed away, which made our family's first catastrophe since my mother lost her soulmate for life and the breadwinner of the family. At that present time, there's a subdivision for this property in the process of being approved for 23 homes, which is why our company purchased the property to continue producing revenues to repay loans. Just a few more town board meetings and the project was going to be approved since the preliminary stage had already been completed. About 6 months later, we learned about the Highlands Act hit directly onto our property, which suddenly locked it up without a warning. And as you can imagine, years of planning, sacrificing, and livelihood of many employees was halted with it. Due to the subdivision and the process being approved, the farm assessment tax rates were dropped, and there's a huge difference for the tax rate increase. After the Highlands Act halted our operation, we went back to Sparta Municipal Court and tried to reverse the higher property tax rate back to the original farm assessment tax rate, but was denied and left us with the additional burden of heavier expenses to pay for when we cannot utilize the land appropriately. You have no idea how it feels, one catastrophe after another without any relief in sight. We are heavily in debt by several million dollars, and it's been taking a toll on all of us, especially my widowed mother, who has been exceptionally strong, working hard throughout the years, and can no longer take it. If this parcel of land has been designated for Highlands preservation, then my mother, who's worked so hard throughout the years, deserves full compensation soon. Not some years from now, just like how the Highlands Act was railroaded so quickly, we want to see the compensation. And also, let's not forget about what we take for granted, that every night we all go home to a place that was built by a builder and a plate of food on the table, which is produced by a farmer. The builders and farmers are not outlaws here. On behalf of my widowed mother, Maria Natalia, and myself, we would like to thank all of you for listening to us on how this unforeseen situation has affected our lives and our livelihood. We are hardworking New Jersey taxpayers, and all we ask for is not to be victimized in the process of passing the Highlands Act. Well, there's a couple more things I did want to conclude to my speech over here. Like, just like Mr. Plump has made his comments over there. The guy's just running in place and he's about to sink down under because he's selling part of the business. That's not right. There's one woman in here, she said something about, oh, this plan is going in the right direction, but I never heard her say a word about paying off the people who are hurting financially. And then there's a man by the first name, Stanley. He said something about, this plan should count every individual. No, it seems like this plan is very one-sided. I'm trying to be on both sides over here, not about the almighty dollar and how much can I profit off this job. No, $7 million worth of debt slammed on me. I'm selling off part of my business because I can't afford to keep it any longer. And also, 2 weeks ago on News 12, I saw a report about a major wooden line. I cannot be quoted on which line, which company it was, since I saw the story once. But it was, according to them, the New Jersey business for 2006, 61% of people that did business with them are moving out of the state. Okay? I go to the top-notch operator who said the heck with New Jersey and went down to North Carolina to start all over again. He said that's no way for him to be working hard and he can't even afford to stay over here. You know what? I was just trying to push some fair compensation behind all this. And I dedicated this speech today coming all the way down from Persephone to over here, which is not right around the corner, in dedication from my mother, who's been through so much. And it's, I don't want to come off, you know, yelling at people or challenging people, saying, tell me how this is fair. No, this is a dedication for her. I want to see how the Highlands Council, or any of us in this room, can tell me how we're going to be very compensated and soon. But the thing is, I don't ever hear any of that. And that's the part that's really disturbing. But I basically gave you the end result of what's been going on with us. Even though I did not bring that up at previous meetings because we were limited to our time. And I'm just going to leave it as that. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Eric Stiles. I'm Vice President of Conservation in New Jersey Audubon. I'm going to supplement remarks that I made at Voorhees. Little did I know that Highlands Council was Latin for scar tissue. You must have some pretty thick skins at this point in time. And I left my applause machine at home, so it may be silent when I'm done. Again, I have a strong background in ecology, both professionally and through training, working for the state agency for 10 years, graduate degrees in ecology at Rutgers University. Just again, to correct the record, New Jersey Audubon derives no dollars in operations, endowment, et cetera, through the Garden State Preservation Trust. And I would welcome the opportunity that was offered by Julia Summers and myself on earlier occasions for Highlands landowners to join us January 29th to work to renew and strengthen the Garden State Preservation Trust. We work very closely with George Pearson, with the Society for American Foresters, urban conservation advocates, land trust, environmental groups, trying to renew that pool of money, which is an empty gas tank at this point. In summary, my comments before were the strong science behind the ecosystem management characterization. Based upon that, this very strong, what I call placeholder language or aspirational language regarding zone standards and site design standards. For example, it refers to the development of habitat conservation plans, but we don't know what those standards are going to look like, what that process is going to look like. So we urge during the pre-conformance process that these standards that result in things like habitat conservation plans and best management practices continue to be based upon scientific standards from the peer review literature, like the draft RMT is, that the standards and benchmarks be transparent and the process be transparent, both for the regulated community as well as for the advocates. Second, our legal counsel agrees with your legal counsel and the AG's office that rare species protection is not only an opportunity under the Act, but a mandate. In fact, I recall working with Commissioner Campbell and Assemblyman McKeon when there were some legislators that removed the language about protecting rare wildlife, and that was going to be a strike issue for us. And I was very proud that our governor and our commissioner, Assemblyman McKeon, put that language back in. So we concur with your counsel, unlike the former testimony from Mr. Stavinsky. The other thing I would stress for this council to consider, if there's areas that are less than 1 square mile that meet the criteria of a community zone, it becomes a specially planned area. And we don't oppose that. However, there needs to be reciprocity. If you have less than 1 square mile that falls within your community zone, that is critical to our drinking water supply, wetlands, endangered species, steep slopes, significant natural areas, then there should be the delineation of special protection zones. Again, it follows the science, it follows the precedent, the good precedent that you set, which says that the data should be driving our zonation. We don't have that reciprocity for protection, and that is absolutely critical. Another missing placeholder in regards to the creation of habitat conservation plan standards and pre-conformance, there's no recognition of coordination with DEP on that. There's placeholder language for regional habitat conservation plans, but not for the local or individual property owners. Since this administration has pledged to release statewide critical habitat protection on Earth Day of this year, they finally gave us a year as opposed to the previous administrations which just said Earth Day, and they are in the process of developing those standards, it's very important that we recognize both the joint authority afforded under the Endangered Non-Game Species Conservation Act and begin that coordination now to reduce, both duplication of effort and have two different standards that offers confusion to the regulated community. Again, I just want to stress that there's a huge opportunity for this council and for the landowners of the Highlands to work to renew the Garden State Preservation Trust. They can participate by calling 609-392-1181 Joanna Wolliver is the campaign coordinator. We'd love to plug you into our activities. Thank you.
Doug Williams. Doug Williams, you're followed by Tony DiLorenzo.
Doug Williams, Flanders, about 120 acres, preservation zone. I actually came here to say something else today about how I got an exemption, and it didn't really work out, because the Highlands wanted the entire bulk of the property for 2 acres. And this gentleman from Sparta got up, and he said how the dam in Sparta was decaying and was in need of repair. And brought to mind several years ago when we had floods and several of the dams, private dams in Sparta area, they all broke loose. DEP started to go after some of the landowners to repair these because they were on their land. And yet DEP says they own all the waters, proving it is their 300-foot buffer zones. You don't know whether you're allowed to go into these streams or not. And these people have to get all kinds of engineering. They're private dams, probably some of them in excess of several $100,000 or many tens of thousands of dollars anyway to repair. And yet the state, again, they claim they own the water, and yet they're telling a private homeowner or landowner that he's going to have to make the repairs on this dam. In this case, the dam is Sparta, which is quite an association, which probably doesn't have a whole bunch of money. I just think that this Highlands Council is not really doing what they're set up to do. You're supposed to be here protecting the water, creating resources for us, and you're really not doing that. It's just almost seems like it's another government scam where everybody wants it, the government wants it, but they don't want to take care of it. They want to hold a private landowner to take care of something that they say that they want to have. And that's pretty much it. Thank you.
Be followed by Marion Harris.
Good afternoon. Thank you, John, for getting my name correct. It's not an easy thing. Thank you. I am Tony DiLorenzo, Principal Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for Shore Palmer. And again, I was at the Sparta hearing, and I was going to thank the council for remembering I was there. It's always good to be remembered. But that hearing, I represented a specific client in Vernon Township. Today I'm here representing the New Jersey chapter of the National Association of Industrial and Office Properties, NJNIOPS. As the leading commercial real estate, land use, and economic development resource in the state, NJNIOPS has an impact on hundreds of thousands of people. NJNIOPS family includes over 525 members, 10,000 businesses that are their tenants, and more than 600,000 people who work in their buildings. Commercial real estate creates jobs, beginning with construction workers and continuing to everyone from the security guard to the cleaning crew to the parking attendant. They're all part of our extended family. NJNIOPS members live in New Jersey. We raise our families here. We are impacted on a personal level by government actions, especially those that deal with environmental protection and restrictions on land use. We want to be sure that New Jersey's natural environment remains protected while its economy stays strong and competitive with other states, because it matters to all of us. We have reviewed the draft Highlands Master Plan and have concerns. NJNIOPS will be preparing a detailed comment letter on all of our issues with the draft plan. However, today I'm here to advise the council on 7 of our major points of concern. These concerns are as follows. Number 1, the plan must address ample opportunities for economic development at the local level for residents of those communities. Jobs are vital to the welfare of the citizens. Number 2, the plan must clearly allow for appropriate growth, infill, redevelopment of brownfields, and other opportunities in planning area communities. As currently written, we cannot confirm this. Number 3, it is essential that the plan provide for detailed economic impact analysis. NJ NIAP simply cannot embrace the plan without this. Number four, the plan must address the need to expand water supply and wastewater treatment capacities to meet the needs of the growing population. The technical documents that were, and perhaps are still being generated, were not available for us to review to address the appropriateness of water availability and wastewater treatment capacities. I guess my engineering mind has a hard time understanding how a document can be released for conclusions prior to the supporting documents being available for review. We will review all those documents and provide comments, particularly on water supply and wastewater treatment capacities, and I will not comment on that at this time. Number five, we are concerned with the lack of criteria on how plant community zones are identified. Many existing developed sites with room to expand are not identified for growth. The areas that are identified as plant community zones have laid upon them various site-specific standards and restrictions that will severely limit the ability of those sites to be developed or redeveloped. The GIS data that was used to develop the many site-specific restriction maps in the plan were not made available for us as an organization to review or to overlay on our sites to see what restrictions there are and to understand the development potential of the sites. I think it's imperative that the plan in and of itself identify these various restrictions and identify how much land is actually available in these areas for development and redevelopment. Number six, as planned community zones are essential, are in essence the targeted smart growth areas, the proposed development restrictions must be lessened in these areas and certainly be no greater than in the remaining portion of New Jersey. The New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection has some of the most restrictive environmental regulations in the country, and in fact, by their own admission or their own statements, their stormwater management regs are the most restrictive in the nation. And we would like to see an acknowledgement in the plan that these regulations do have effects in controlling the harmful effects from development. And number seven, the plan should clearly emphasize that encouraging growth in targeted plant communities will lessen the amount of traffic and result in pollution that would otherwise be generated if residents had to travel farther to their jobs. Thank you very much.
Mary Harris.
You submitted the response to us.
I'm from the Mars County Trust for Historic Preservation, and I also represent a small group of people who believe that cultural resources and natural resources are inseparable and can't be protected separately. That's supposed to be a mantra by now. We are very strongly in favor of this plan. We have high hopes for it when the details are finally all in place, and it's very good to hope that there will be another chance to comment when there is more detail, of which we hope will apply specifically to cultural resources as well as the other things that are more fully in the plan. I've spoken superficially about history and the inventory of cultural resources and regulation of them before. I'd like to say a couple more things about these things because they too are very closely interrelated. The inventory has to be compiled by people who understand the historical background. Right now in the plan there are, I think, two paragraphs about the history of the area. Maybe more like three pages would do it, so presumably that needs to be fleshed out considerably. One of the historical aspects of this area that is most important to the development of its cultural resources is the fact that this was a major center of iron industry. And in order to recognize the pieces of the iron industry that are left to us, many of which, of course, have disappeared completely, you have to understand what you're looking for. Often these things are recognizable only as changes in the contour of the ground, and you don't know that you've got an iron site there until you dig around and discover that there were also some iron makers' houses
nearby there was a major collection of buildings which are only now foundations of that. So that you need to know, this inventory needs to be made by people who are familiar with the history, but also people who understand that they are not just collecting a list of old buildings. They have to be able to make a judgment of the significance of a building or any other cultural artifact which has appeared because of the way the area developed. The inventory, a crucial mass of the inventory, is required before you can decide what kind of regulations are needed to control it, because if you don't know what you've got, you can't tell how it should be protected. When the inventory is made, when the regulations are made, there are some things that need to be included in it. One of the major things in the regulations should be a set of design guidelines that describe what is characteristic of cultural resources in the Highlands. Things like how dense were the settlements, how big were the buildings, how were they arranged on the site, as well as what kinds of designs the individual buildings had. But that's only for buildings. There are other kinds of cultural resources that need to be described too. And if you don't have a set of design guidelines, it's very hard to explain to people what it is that you're asking them to build compatibly with. So there is a reference in the plan, I believe, to something which is called smart design. Those of us in the field look at that scratch our heads. We don't know what smart design is. There are probably some definitions that need to go into the plan, or at least into the design guidelines. And if you keep them separate, then they're more changeable than if you enact them into something formally. The regulations also need to apply in areas that are not in the preservation area. The suggestion that historic districts in the preservation area be rewarded by being allowed to use TDRs has an obverse. When the TDRs go to receiving districts, there needs to be some rather strong regulation there in order to protect cultural resources. It might be a good idea to require a receiving district to have an up-to-date inventory of its own resources, not just cultural resources, but also somebody brought up the question of natural resources that might be endangered by additional development that was being funneled out of the preservation area. So if you ask these people to qualify for receiving these benefits, which presumably they will see as benefits because they're asking for them, then they should make sure that their cultural resources are protected by being at least recognized. Otherwise, we're going to get a swath of disaster through the areas, as we're getting now from things like redevelopment plans in some of these same areas. We'll have even more specific suggestions for what should go into these regulations when we file our written comments.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Craig Turner? Followed by Mike Hershen. Can I ask a few people who are left if you want to keep having conversations, if you please just go out in the hall, please?
Good afternoon, Council. My name is Fred Turner. I'm an officer with the Sparley Property Owners Association. Sparley is located in Sparta, New Jersey. We are the beginning, or one of the highest points of the Rockaway River drainage area. Our drainage area, of course, feeds the Jersey City 9 billion gallon water reservoir. Sparta Lake, like other dams in the Highland area, is currently under threat of drainage due to safety concerns imposed by the New Jersey Dam Safety Group. As the gentleman said previously, that in 2000 we experienced a 1 in 1,000 year rainstorm. This rainstorm dumped 16 inches of water on Sparta Mountain, which overflowed our dam. We have a very low hazard dam. There was minimal damage. However, our dam does not have the adequate spillway per current dam safety requirements. This rainstorm made other dams in the area fail. When they failed, the dam safety group marched up to the Highlands and said, all private dams, you must upgrade. Since that time, many dams have been drained. Some were drained during that event. And now we're at a particular crossroads here where the Highlands law will prevent us as an association from getting the support of the undeveloped lots to repair our dam. So it's one against the other. Dam Safety Group says repair your dam or drain it. Highlands law says protect all your water, but the property owners, you have no interest in this anymore because you can't pay the fee. They have nothing to pay the fee with. Their property is now pretty much undeveloped. But to go a little further, the current Highlands law provides no inventory, maintenance plans, repair plans, modernization plans for any of the streams, rivers, or dams in the Highland area. This whole drainage area and all these little lakes, streams, and waters, brooks, some next to large developments, if they're lost, then the whole recharging aquifers, erosion control, water quality, ecosystem, the wildlife up in our area is unbelievable. We're right next to the Sparta Mountain Game Reserve. We're going to lose all this. So, in conclusion here, I ask that the council look at this Highlands Act, look at the infrastructure, provide funding for infrastructure improvements, try to develop a way to get funding for infrastructure improvements, and I believe that this should be a main point of the Highlands Act, not only to protect development or limit development, but also enhance what's there. Some other articles out here in the news recently said that in 2030, the Highlands Act, the Highlands will not be able to provide enough water for New Jersey. Increasing funding in infrastructure may alleviate that problem. I'm not quite sure this point, but I'd like to make it anyway. The Highlands law, as currently written, does not mandate septic systems to be cleaned out with any frequency. The Sparta Association approved is suggesting or requesting that every septic system in the Highlands area be cleaned out minimum once every 4 years. This alone will stop a tremendous amount of pollution due to some of these systems date back 60, 70 years. The other thing that the Highlands Act does not call for is a total ban on lawn fertilization. The development that's been happening in the Highlands, as your council really knows, everyone wants a beautiful green lawn. This beautiful green lawn is flooding our waters with nutrients, which is leading to algae growth every summer, which is causing a two-fold problem. One is it's the acidification of the water, and also we're using chemicals to fight the algae growth, which I don't think you want in your water. Thank you for your time.
Hi, I'm Mike Erson, Highlands Issues Coordinator for the Sierra Club. By way of introduction also, I was formerly a member of the Planning Board of Mike'stown. Actually, I was on two planning boards, and I was a Cross Acceptance Coordinator for Mike'stown years ago. The reason why I bring that up is the RFP needs implementation language that ensures coordination with state agencies and the State Planning Commission. An MOU is sorely needed as well. An MOU that ensures regional planning and the goals of the Highlands Act are followed. I just came from the State Implementation Committee meeting, and I want to report to you that the PIC voted to recommend plan endorsement of the Sussex County Plan, despite the Highlands Council's recommendations that the SPC defer action on the plan endorsement. The RMP fails to indicate no build zones. Your RMP fails to indicate no build zones, contrary to the Act. The public in Sussex County, therefore, cannot determine where the no-build zone should be. So it's not easy to compare the Sussex County plan with what the vision for the Highlands should be based on Highlands Council. One area I would suggest is steep slopes. Slopes over 25% at the very least. Unfortunately, the Sussex plan calls for 10 acres only on slopes between 25 and 30 degrees. There are numerous other discrepancies between the SPC's vision for the Highlands, as demonstrated by their embrace of the Sussex plan and what the Act calls for. Glenn Vitrano was the only Highlands Council member to testify at this hearing. I'm going to give you a copy of my testimony to the SPC in the interest of compressing time. I know you've been taking a lot of testimony, it's a long day. But the Highlands region has been designated by state law as a special resource area, an area with unique characteristics or resources of statewide importance, which are essential to the sustained well-being and function of its own region and other regions or systems, and to the quality of life for future generations. The water and the resources in the Highlands affect 5.4 million people, as you've heard me say many times. The State Planning Commission should realize and recognize that Sussex County Plan could undermine our water supply, biodiversity, and natural resources, which is of statewide importance. The Sussex Plan does not consider the impact of other regions or systems. Therefore, the Sierra Club believes that the State Plan endorsement for Sussex, as recommended today, violates the State Planning Commission's policy for special resource area planning and implementation for the Highlands. It's up to the Highlands Council to ensure that strong regional planning is contained in this regional master plan. And maybe there's been a lack of coordination between the different government agencies, the state agencies, the Highlands Council, and the State Planning Commission. Or maybe there's been cooperation, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's resource protection, which there needs to be, which the Act calls for. Anything that you could do to ensure the goals of the Act would be really well warranted right now. There's so many people who depend on that water, and so much pressure to develop, short-sighted pressure from, you know, from individual interests, which will undermine the economy of the state overall. It's disappointing that there aren't more people from the areas that depend on Highlands water that are outside of the Highlands. There's apparently over 200 towns like that. And I don't think there's been enough outreach, as I've said before, to those people. I'm hoping that at some point they will make their voice heard. But right now, this is very abstract to them. And the state has done a poor job of communicating to them. One suggestion I would make for revising the regional master plan is that this body should use the proper name that the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act designated, which is the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council. Calling yourselves the New Jersey Highland Council, you know, doesn't get the point across that your mission is a water protection mission. That is right in the Act. I believe you should change your name, and I believe you should try to educate everyone and change the title on all your documents and on your regional master plan. The water protection aspects are being overrun. Regional planning is going out the window, and this thing is slip-sliding away from us right now. And I'm very disappointed. I have more than 10 years background in understanding regional planning from my experience in the Meadowlands. And I will tell you that the Meadowlands Commission, when it was the Meadowlands Development Commission, did not necessarily have the right goals for the environment in mind, but they knew how to do a regional plan and get implementation and do all those things that they needed to do. And this lack of no build zones, this lack of some data, all these things are hurting the effort at this point. So there needs to be a lot more information in the regional master plan that gets us from
to cast goals and dreams into concrete reality where you can say, well, no, it doesn't make sense that your plan for your center or your plan for this node or your plan for this environment is too intense for the water protection goals of the Act. The Sussex Plan, for instance, doesn't have a watershed basis to it. They're using old data. It's incumbent on this council, the Water Protection and Planning Council, to coordinate and inform the State Planning Commission and Sussex County and all the other counties and all the other people who want to rush things through as soon as possible. You need to inform them that there are resource constraints and watershed constraints. To use 1995 land use land cover data, when 2002 land use land cover GIS data layers are in a draft form downloadable on a DEP website, it just doesn't make any sense to use that old data. You should look at the two slices of data and say, oh my God, look what you people have done already without this Act. And if we don't make some concrete, immediate steps, we are going to go through process after process after process, and more land will be lost, and more resources will be lost. I was especially disappointed to hear at the conclusion of the meeting today, the chairman of the Planning Implementation Committee say that, well, it's good to go forward and we can always fix it later. The problem is you can't fix it later once you've developed a watershed. You can't restore a resource. You can't restore habitat for a threatened and endangered species too easily, if ever. So these are all things that need to be done. The regional master plan has to have an implementation language and concrete and measurable things in it that will prevent this mumbo-jumbo planner talk. And believe me, you know, I respect planners, but, you know, there's a lot of nice words and not a lot of quantification. And I'm basically a numbers person. The regional master plan needs more quantification, more concrete measures, more attention paid to what's on the ground, and more communication. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I believe that concludes our hearing. Is everyone who signed up to speak? Again, we welcome your written comments to the council's website or council address, all of which is on the material that I assume is still out in the hall. Our public comment period extends through March 2nd and on the information at the Highlands Council website. So thank you all for your attention and your time.
What is it to say?